Normal. Normal. Come on, guys. Normal. No, that's nothing. Normal. Two legs, two arms. Normal.
I think every time he watches that last fight, you know, I'm under his skin. And you know, every time you watch memes of him getting held by Cain Velasquez crying, you know, that gets under his skin.
So is your, like,
my
hatred?
Mere existence is, gets under his skin.
The bad gimmicks he's given that's ruined potentially good talent's careers. The bad writing that he's done that's ruined, you know, promotions possibly compete with Vince. The stupid shit that he did when he was with Vince that he takes credit for, you know, the big boom period when there's Steve Austin and The Rock and a network quality production facility and Jim Ross, the best announcer in the history of wrestling, and all of these tools that he had at his disposal, and, you know, he was writing fucking midgets and people painted fucking colors and everything, and takes credit for the big, it just, the whole thing.
Here to be somebody else.
It didn't show any ringing on my end.
I answered it quick.
Yeah, and the microphone sounds much better.
Yeah, I read the directions.
That's so stupid. I'm surprised it wasn't me.
Well, yeah, I did some cleaning around the house. I'm like, here's the directions for this. And I was sure I had it set up right, and I always thought it sounded weird and not how it should. And I was flipping through the instruction book. Oh my god, I've had this thing on the wrong setting. It was like set up to do like record a band live. Like if you had to record like an entire room as opposed to straight on. It's got like a bunch of different settings. You could do like a one-on-one interview with one of you on each side of the mic, or like record the sound of an entire room. And that's what I was doing. So that might have been messed up for the last, I don't know, 6 months.
Well, you know, these things they're a work in progress.
Yeah, yeah, it's trial and error. Mostly error.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, yeah.
So welcome to Anime and Stuff on halfhearted.com. My name is Matt Grady. That lovely gentleman is Michael Laughlin. Here we talk anime and stuff. And I was thinking this week we could actually start with some non-MMA stuff, because there haven't been many MMA events to review or preview lately. Bellator and UFC were both up.
Cool.
The past year, they're off against some of you. So not a lot going on in traditional MMA world, but I was able to find some things to talk about this week for sure. So I thought we could go combat sports anyways. We really almost never talk about boxing on the show, but I think we were missed in mentioning the heavyweight boxing match from this past weekend. A 90,000 people at Wembley Stadium saw Anthony Joshua defeat Vladimir Klitschko by TKO in the 11th round. This was really a star-making performance for Joshua. He's 27 years old, a 2012 Olympic gold medal winner in boxing, and wins by no record, which no boxing doesn't necessarily mean a whole heck of a lot, but all 19 wins have been by KO, and it drew really well, especially in Europe. I think the fight aired on Showtime in the States and did like 600,000 viewers, but he looks like the type of guy who could end up being, you know, the next heavyweight champion and still possible in 2017. Did you catch the fight?
Not only did I catch it, and it just went off on my phone. I set a reminder to tell myself to talk about this, because I watched the fight live on Saturday. It was on Showtime, then HBO had a replay of it.
Okay.
I'd heard a lot of the hype, but and it's always boxing, so I don't really. It's not always so much as like, it's just an artificial record. It's so much as it is. Anytime you get like high level boxing, and you start telling me about, like, you know, exciting fights, it doesn't happen. You know, that's the great thing about the UFC. They will hype the fuck out of something. And then you'll get Conor McGregor last year, who had three of the most dynamic and amazing fights you could dream of when people were all watching. So MMA usually promises and delivers. Boxing almost never delivers. And that was not the case on Saturday. This was the perfect storm of everything. I think this was the biggest moment in boxing in years. Like, I would consider it a bigger, more important than Mayweather-Pacquiao. Because Mayweather-Pacquiao, everything ended. Mm-hmm. With this, it feels like they hyped up this guy as he's the next big heavyweight. He's a knockout guy. He knocks out everybody. And he went out there. He knocked out the former champion, a guy that everybody knew was a champion. He knocked him out. And not only that, they just had a fucking legendary fight. It was incredible. It's one of the best fights I've ever seen, especially maybe the best heavyweight I've ever seen live I can think of, especially at the high level. I mean, this was their version of, you know, Conor McGregor having great fights with Nate Diaz. Like, they just had they hyped him up. They put all their cards, all their chips on one card, and it came up as an ace. So it was a magic moment, I think. The 90,000 people in Wembley made it seem important. And I'll say this, next time I see that Joshua's going to fight, I will for sure go out of my way to watch it. I won't pay for it, but I'll for sure watch it.
Who, I mean, obviously there's a dearth of big-time heavyweight boxers, you can tell. I'm not a huge boxing guy by any stretch. Like, I don't. Obviously, they could do a rematch with Klitschko, but he's 41 now. He's tough. He had that Tyson Fury loss. So I'm wondering if, again, not being a boxing guy, if Klitschko's going to live long, 241, he's got all 7 pro fights in his career. He clearly is on the downside of his career, and Joshua's on the upswing. Would you rematch those guys? I know Tyson Fury had some legal troubles, and he's supposedly like 400 pounds now. So I don't know where you what you do next with Joshua. Is there anybody out there for him to fight that would draw or interest people?
Like, yeah, I don't really know the ins and outs as far as names go. The only real name I really know of is Tyson Fury, and that's because, you know, he beat Klitschko. He really did do it first, and he was such a weirdo. But even then, like, I only remember maybe 2 of his fights.
Yeah, I remember him singing. Like, I remember him, that post-fight promo he did, but
yeah,
as far as anything else, I know very little.
Yeah, and I also think it's something about boxing where boxing puts everything on not just one fighter, but one type of fighter. Boxing always sells, watch the mythical best who's ever lived. And so that's why these undefeated records with all knockouts and all this stuff mean so much, because you're buying into seeing a part of history for the most part. Like, you don't really care. Name one Floyd Mayweather fight from his last 5 besides Pacquiao.
Canelo?
Was it?
I would think.
Maybe?
Yeah, probably.
I don't know.
Guerrero?
But, you know, and he had a bunch of other fights. You don't even really remember them.
Yeah.
You certainly don't remember anything about the fight because you're buying that thing. And I think with Joshua, I'm going to be interested just to see, can he keep beating people up? Because that's how you view boxing. Like, boxing is that 1930s New York City, who's the toughest kid on the block type of deal. It's very throwback in that sense. And as long as you show a little bit of charisma, he'll probably do okay. I say that, though, I'm still on the high, if you will, of how awesome that fight was. But he's got at least one more in him. And I don't know who he fights. I mean, Klitschko, I wouldn't want to see it again. He beat the name guy. I don't want to see the name guy possibly come back and fuck it up. So, I don't know. I'm sure they'll find somebody they can tell me is really great. And because I want to see the fight, I'll buy into it.
Yeah, I mean, the name I'm seeing a lot is a guy named Deontay Wilder.
Oh, yeah.
But again, boxing is so weird because sometimes they have it's not like the UFC where they can usually get the fight down because all the guys are under contract to them. There's just like the different managers and promotions and everything. It can get weird. And I mean, Mayweather and Pacquiao took 5 years to put together, probably more than that. And maybe they were both trying to put the fight off or whatever, but even a fight like that almost didn't happen. So, you never know with boxing. It can be weird. And if he doesn't have the right...
Especially given, you know, a lot of these managers, it's not just these guys all have different managers, that's bad enough, but most of these managers are either stupid or corrupt. Like, there's very few people who really give a shit about doing a good deal. They're just street thugs, or they're, like, again, they're Bob Arum, out-and-out Don King crooks, so these guys are all fucked. Although I will say, if you're in the top-level guy, you gotta give it credit in the sense that Joshua, who... you know, nobody in MMA is as unfamous as he is. I should say he's not as famous as really most of the top guys in the UFC, not even close. Obviously, he's not doing any real numbers in the United States where all the money is.
Right.
And he's still got $8 million for that fight.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, that's more than basically all but like 2 or 3 people in UFC history.
Right.
And he had 600,000 people on Showtime. Fucking Conor McGregor had 1.5 million people on pay-per-view. It's crazy, man.
Yeah, crazy. Well... You got to wonder, most of that pay is probably coming from Europe anyway, but even so, it sounds definitely far askew. And obviously, you look at what Mayweather and Pacquiao make per fight, and it's
even crazier when Pacquiao will make $20 million on 300,000 buys, you know?
I wonder if the whole thing is just like a money laundering front for the mob.
It sounds sketchy to me. Like what was Klitschko paid for that fight? It was probably $20 million, I bet.
Whatever it was basically the equivalent of, you know, headlining with Tim Sylvia or Jeff Monson, like, you know, like a former champion, but not like a guy anybody really gave a shit when he fought. We're not talking Brock Lesnar coming back.
Right. So, yeah, we'll see where Joshua ends up. Obviously, they'll probably want to get him fighting in Vegas soon and have a big fight in Vegas. And even if it's not a top-tier guy, just get him a couple more knockout wins and build up that Tyson aura. Yeah, actually, the purse was split. It was a 30-million-pound purse, and each of them made 15 million pounds. I don't know what that translates to USD nowadays, but, yeah, they split it even.
Huh, because I they said on TV that it was $8 million, but it sounds like a pound's that. No, that's a skewed thing, so I don't know how that shit. They must have said something wrong on TV then. Because 15 million pounds feels like about $20 million, I think.
Yeah, 19.3 million.
God damn, I'm a sexy motherfucker with brains of steel.
That was pretty good. Yeah, so anyway, they both made a lot more money than anybody in the UFC, except Conor makes, for sure, for a fight that no one in the States watched. Absolutely, you are correct in that regard. Changing gears, Nate Diaz had an interview today. Did you catch any of it?
No, I didn't. It sounds like I really missed out. Like, you're not the only one who told me about, like, this crazy fucking interview, so I might have to listen tomorrow or something.
I wouldn't say it was crazy, but it was entertaining, and I just feel like Nate, in particular, is really, like, coming to his own. He's just got this confidence and swagger, and there's something when he's on with Helwani. He literally walks around the house during the interview with, like, his camera phone, and it's on Skype, and he's showing, like, Helwani things in the house, and they're just, like, fit back. It's just, like, a unique way to do an interview, and fair Diaz enough is just so laughing.
What time do you have to talk to him?
Doesn't leave a shit that he'll say whatever, and there's even times during the interview where he totally contradicts himself, but it's almost like you're willing to overlook it because it's just at a different level now than he's living. Like, he's like a totally different guy than he was 3 years ago, and maybe, you know, sitting on, I don't know, 7 or 6 of years, maybe you don't have Carol anymore. Essentially, Cam Ross, like, he'll fight again if the money's right and the right guy comes along, but he's in no hurry, and that's kind of the vibe we've gotten all along. And the contradiction for this, he claimed that he and Nick really haven't talked to anyone about fighting again. And then probably half an hour later, he says he's offered a fight with Tony Ferguson on July 8th. He said he gladly accepted it. Then he rejected it because he didn't want to do Connor's dirty work for him. And his basic claim was that Connor and Tony have the same management team. And they basically want to get the Diaz fight between if they don't want Connor and Ferguson to fight. For whatever reason, and they'd rather have Ferguson get a payday and then go on to Connor, maybe, or Nate with that fight, but Ferguson still gets paid. He had some weird stuff like that in it. He was saying the McGregor Mayweather fight and talk is all bullshit. Mayweather's selling Wolf tickets, and he was just bringing out old stuff, new stuff. He even showed, like, this model hand, which was, like, giving the middle finger. And he said, "Ain't white."
Anyways,
and
then he's like,
kind of like statue sort of really thing. And it was the middle finger. Sure, and I didn't know how to say it. Text him and said, something, and it made me thought of you. But the middle finger. Yeah, but the middle finger. Nate's like, I don't know how to take that. The guy's sending me the middle finger in the mail. So the whole thing was just, like, an hour and a half long. But, Helwani gave him a lot of time just to ramble on, and it was a fun interview. I'd check it out. I mean, I'm sure they're going to cut it up and have highlights there, so you don't have to sit in 1.5 hours, but definitely worth checking out. And he was pretty candid and open about a lot of stuff, even though he was contradictory throughout.
Well, he's a Diaz. He can't really help but be candid and open and contradictory.
It's their gimmick, I know. But there was just a time where I felt like he's still kind of like a mush mouth, obviously, but he's a lot more, there's just a confidence and a swagger there that he didn't have a couple years ago, which just makes him even more entertaining and more engaging and
really, the cheap UFC is in this year with Connor on the sidelines for God knows how long, Ronda out, Jones will be back presumably in July if he doesn't screw up again. Nate's their biggest star. Like, and he was saying that. Like, a lot of people don't recognize that. After those people I just mentioned, it's Nate and Nick, those biggest stars, and it's like they're going to wait around until the price or the fight is right.
Yeah, I mean, they're incapable of lying. They're very Trumpian. You know, you kind of get caught up going, am I really saying this? Like, he just said the exact opposite, but he's so sincere. Maybe I misheard him. What's going on? And you just, especially Nate and Nick, you just know that they have some sort of convoluted logic behind all of their thoughts, where they could explain it to you and be like, okay, I ignore everything else. All right, I guess I buy into your point for his Conor McGregor conspiracy theory, even though, yeah, like, the UFC is never going to let that shit fly. For fuck's sake. Dana White went out of his way as a principal to basically break up Rashad Evans and John Jones. You know, he's not going to let Tony Ferguson dick him around. I mean, yeah, our Lobov got a main event because of Conor, but whoever's United States management is. So, hey, whatever, Nate. You're living your life, and I think some of them, I always feel like they've been kind of picked on and bullied, and for the first time in their life, they actually feel like they have a little bit of power. I just enjoy it, so good for you, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, legitimately, they do have power. Like, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think that they're on now, and a lot of people, it's not essentially the biggest fight he's ever done in his other half, and he started to see the lead up to it, and even this guy, it wasn't like he got killed in that fight. Some people thought he won it, and they've just got the following, and the big. He's been on Conan, he's been on all these shows, and I think just people forget that, and for whatever reason, it's probably a lot of stuff behind the scenes. They're probably a pain in the ass to work with, and a main headache. And I get both sides here, but actually, UFC is going to have to crawl back to them because they have nobody else. There just isn't anybody available who can draw. And this first 5 months of 2017 has been very sparse for them, pay per view revenue wise, where there's not much coming in and there's not much on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, and sometimes people, they'll hear like, oh, he's not a draw. Because they're thinking draw ends up for St. Pierre, Conor McGregor. But no, you don't have to be that bold when you realize that any other fan will know. Mm-hmm. They're not going to know. They would maybe be aware of some sort of Muslim dude with a funny name. They wouldn't really know or care about. They're not going to know Tony Ferguson at all. I guarantee you most people would just mix Ferguson and Junior Dos Anjos. Javier Dos Anjos. Like, I guarantee they would just be thinking, same guy. You know, kind of tanned dudes who are not American. So, yeah, I mean, and the Diaz brothers, you can't help but think of them. And plus, he has a benefit of, Bill Connor has some really big, devastating loss in the future. He's always the asterisk. He's always one guy and everybody will be like, Conor McGregor wasn't the Nate Diaz. Or Conor McGregor was in the UFC, except for the Nate Diaz fight. So he's always going to remember because he went out there and he slayed the biggest, baddest dragon there is. So, yeah, Nate and Nick both, they both the right one in there. He's like, it's a fight with GSP. That is significantly more than GSP's other fights, for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, those looked crazy. Fucking crazy, and people like seeing crazy, especially when they know crazy's gonna throw down.
And it's funny, too, because there is some rationality to Nate's arguments about things. Like, when he was talking about Ferguson, Ferguson had a chance to call me out after the Khabib fight didn't happen. He could have called me out then and there, and he didn't. Now his management has gotten to him, and he's trying to call me out. And I like Tony. He respects me, and so I don't know. His team's telling me he should say, don't be scared, homie, and all this other stuff, and try and get a fight with me, but it's disingenuous, and I don't buy it. And watching Ferguson and how he generally behaves and his fighting style, I bet he's a fan of Nate and respects him and probably is doing what his team's telling him to do.
That'd be a fucking awesome fight, those two.
It would be.
Man, just watch the dynamic, especially on the ground, the dynamic grappling they would put on. And I think Nate would actually probably tap out Ferguson. Mm. I think Nate's one of those dudes people really don't. They kind of forget, like, he's super good on the ground. He didn't fuck around with crazy flying leg lock type of things. Like, he's just very good at getting that position. And it was no accident that he choked out Connor that easy. Like, he made that look simple, and a lot of people wouldn't.
Nick, Nate, and Gilbert Melendez were also on Parts Unknown this past week with Anthony Bourdain. Did you catch that?
No. A second, I'm sitting there going, Parts Unknown? Is that a fucking, like,
Ultimate Warriors sitcom? No.
Yeah, I'm like, is this some sort of, like, creepy fucking alien thing? I'm like, I guess the Diaz brothers smoke a lot. Yeah, they could be into that.
No, that isn't that Ancient Aliens or whatever that show is?
I guess that would be more George St. Pierre also.
Maybe. But Anthony Bourdain's written a bunch of...
I know who he is.
Yeah, books about the restaurant business, that
He's
sort of thing.
He's a former heroin addict turned restaurateur.
Yeah, he did. He's more just like a talk show host and travels the world and eats weird food and
he's
stuff.
A foodie. He's like the first. Like he's like the bad boy of being a foodie.
Yeah, he's got like an earring and stuff.
Anyway. He trains jits too.
He does. Yeah, blue belt with Henzo, I think, if memory serves me. But anyway, all three of them were on the show. It was a short clip. It was probably maybe 3-4 minutes long. But basically, they were all just kind of shooting the shit or whatever at some restaurant that Nick and Nate go to quite a bit, I guess. And essentially, they said they grew up eating macaroni and cheese, hot dogs, and ramen noodles. But Nick has been a vegetarian or a vegan since he was 18. And he claims it makes cutting weight easier, which I believe. But he also says that he feels stronger because he's vegetarian and a vegan. Is that even possible, like, genetically?
No.
Yeah, I mean...
You're trying to get me going on vegans.
No, we both like vegans. I don't have a problem with vegans at all.
I was giving shit to one earlier today.
But when you look at, like, the world's strongest man, they're not vegan.
No. Like, vegans are just they're going to be a different body type. It's one of those things where I don't think it's a better diet than being an omnivore. That said, I think for a lot of people, it could be a better diet than what they would be on if they were eating meat. You know, if you're a Diaz brother, or I think Jake Shields, any of these guys, you're a pilot. You're going to probably want to go to McDonald's a lot. And so if you don't eat meat, you're going to probably avoid more of the crap food out there. And, you know, vegans, as a general rule, if you're committing yourself to a lifestyle that strict, you're paying attention to your food. And almost anybody that actually pays attention to their food doesn't get fat. It's only people that are just like, oh, fuck it, I'm hungry. Like I did the other day, eat 2 hot dogs from a 7-Eleven. Because that's where my life came down to. I was hungry, and I was walking through 7-Eleven. I'm like, yeah, I'll get 2 hot dogs. And as I sat down at my desk and went, holy fuck, this is the saddest thing I've ever eaten, I think. And I ate I ate sandwiches from Walgreens. Wow. So, yeah, I mean, good for the Diaz brothers.
And you're still here to talk about it. Yeah, I haven't had a hot dog in years and years. They gross me out.
Well, imagine one from 7-Eleven.
Yeah, was it on the thing that spins the hot dogs?
The spinner belt thing.
Yeah, it's like greasy and your wieners are glistening.
Well, mine is always glistening. Thank you for the setup. And I'm not going to lie. The first one wasn't bad. The second one, as I'm eating, I'm going, oh, this isn't sitting right. Like, I don't think I need 2 hot dogs from 7-Eleven. I think one is more than enough.
Yeah, what do you put on your hot dog?
Nothing at all.
Really?
It's a plain dog. Yep, that's
A raw wiener.
Almost all food I eat is plain. Like, almost everything.
Any reason in particular?
I'm a picky eater.
You eat hot dogs from 7-Eleven and sandwiches from Walgreens. That is not a picky eater.
As far as what variety of foods I eat, I'm very picky.
Okay. If you went somewhere weird, would you try like different food, or would you try and find the most American crap you can find?
It depends.
Okay.
I have tried weird foods in the past. I had mussels when I was in France, and
that's not that weird.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking weird. Wait, is that the one? No. I had the one in the shell.
Mussels come, was it like a black shell? Mussels come, usually they're like in a black shell.
Oh, yeah, and we opened them through the shell in a bucket.
Yeah, that could have been clams, that could have been anything.
Whatever, it's some sort of, like, crustacean.
It's shellfish.
Yeah, that's a big deal for me. Like, that's a huge deal. I don't like fish at all. So I tried that, but I don't know, if I go to a restaurant, I think I've talked about this before.
Maybe.
If I'm going to spend $20 on food,
right?
I want to know that I'm going to enjoy it.
Gotcha.
So I'm going to pick the safest thing, even if I think, oh, that might be really good. I'm going to be like, oh, but I know the hamburger's going to be, you know, more than passable.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, like, be like, yes, I'll try that. That does sound interesting. I'll try that bison burger with a side of arugula. And I'll be like, oh. And if I don't eat it, then I'm like, oh, I wasted money on food. And then I got to eat more food someplace else. So.
Yeah, bison's usually dry. It's very lean. It does, like burger, you can get like different like fat content, whether it's like 85, 15, or however it's split up. But bison is pretty lean. It ends up being dry because there's not a lot of fat.
Yeah, it's a game. It's gamey. It's a game animal, and they tend to be much more lean than, well, basically cows.
Right.
Pigs, I guess.
Well, and it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, they have to run around and fight bears and things.
Fight them. Yes. So, moving along, let's move
to... I wouldn't fucking know bison. Those things are fucking big. I'll fuck you up.
I wasn't recommending that. Anyway, Anderson Silva is back in the news. He did an interview again with our friend Ariel Helwani, where he listed several grievances with the UFC, and I'd love to get your thoughts on each of them. You already seem excited to talk about this.
I like the idea of, like, the way you phrase it, like Anderson Silva's airing of his grievances. Number one, I'm upset with the way Dana White says my name on television, and I'm really not happy with the Reebok. Like, he's just going to air them out like he's the king. These are my grievances. They must be fixed or you will all die. Dude, you're like a 42-year-old guy way past his prime. Who gives a fuck what your grievances are, you twat?
It's like Festivus, you know, the airing of grievances.
Yeah.
At the Silva household.
It only works if somebody gives a shit what you have to say.
Oh.
Are you going to fight? Are you going to sign on the dotted line to fight Ovin St. Preux? And then you're going to tell me what your grievances are? Dude, you're willing to fight OSB. You're a whore. Whores don't get to complain about what the sex is like. That's the whole point.
First, Anderson said, number one grievance. And this is verbatim. I'm not going to try impersonating him, but this is a direct quote.
Dick pills should be legal.
When I signed my last contract, Dana White and Lorenzo, there's your first issue, but Dana White and Lorenzo say, okay, when George St. Pierre is back, you go and fight Super Fight, you and George St. Pierre. I don't know what happened. Nothing happened. George St. Pierre is back to fight and back to fight for the belt. It's terrible. It don't make sense. I know it's a fucking business, but I'm working hard for a long time. George St. Pierre goes back and fights for the belt. I win my fight in London against Bisping. Why no putting me for fight with Bisping? I don't care for the belt, but I won the fight in London. Why no put me in the fight?
This sounds like a Trump tweet.
Because George no ready for fight with Bisping. What the fuck is going on? So that's his first issue. He feels like GSP jumped the line, and he lost the fight to Bisping, but feels he should have won it, and he should be getting the title shot against Bisping, not GSP. That's his first issue.
Look, I understand people are going to be upset. Fuck off, you little bitch. Like, how do you think all the guys at UFC 200 felt when they just chose you to fight Daniel Cormier? I guarantee you there were a lot of other natural light heavyweights who would have loved to have that fight. But, oh, wait, you're more famous and you would have made more money, so you got the fight. Guess what? You're not as famous and you don't make as much money as George St. Pierre. So, you're out. Go out and win a couple more fights. You lost. You can't say, oh, I beat him. No, dude, you just got your first win in 4 years. You cheated to beat Nick Diaz. And you cheated to beat a guy who was never a world champion at a weight class way below yours, who was on drugs while he fought you. And you still cheated, and you didn't even get an official win over him. And then you fought Michael Bisping, a guy who's got no knockout power, and you got put on your ass multiple times. You got beat by Michael Bisping in a technical stand-up battle. And the only real damage you did was because you landed a knee when everybody in the world would have said, don't throw a knee right there, that's kind of dirty. And then you throw in your win over whoever the fuck it was back in
Brunson.
Yeah, see, I thought it was Lawrence Larkin because I get them mixed up. Such a big fucking win that I can't even remember the name of the dude. Now you think, oh yeah, I got one win, actual win in the past half decade.
And a lot of people thought he lost that fight too.
Exactly. You have one barely win in a half a decade and you think, yeah, I should get a title shot. Fuck off. Joel Romero can bitch. You can't bitch, motherfucker.
So you're not feeling his first grievance. Second, he wants an interim title fight with Yoel Romero.
Of course he does.
He said, it's the same with Yoel. What the fuck has happened to me? I win for a long time. I'm champion for a long time. 4 years. Nothing happened. I don't believe in nothing Dana talks because I'm very disappointed. I'm tired, bro. So apparently there was talk of a fight with Yoel and it fell through, but he doesn't know why or what the situation is. Would an interim title fight with Yoel make sense?
Did he say he was champion for 4 years?
I'm champion for a long time. 4 years. Like, LR.
Oh, okay. I'm like, because I'm sitting there thinking, it's been 4 years since you won, bitch. That would be a great fight. I would take that fight. I think it would be a fair fight for, in the sense of, again, Anderson is a name. I'm not saying he's not, like, a draw or he's not good. And Yoel could use it as a signature win. And if Anderson could beat Yoel, then he would prove something. So I would totally make that fight. But it just sounds like a guy who's just, we start throwing up the interim title stuff. First of all, fuck you, UFC. This is all on you. You guys have this one coming. You're the boy who cried wolf. You got burned on this. You gave out so many interim title fights. You fucking interim titles for interim titles, you dicks. So, I mean, honestly, if I'm Anderson Silva, I'd probably be like, yeah, sure, let's have an interim title fight. Because I'm a dumb fucking moron from the barrios of Brazil, or favelas, mixing my languages and countries and races and whatever. And, you know, I'm not sophisticated or smart, so I'm thinking, whoa, I guess interim titles is what we do now, so I should get one of those, even though I guess I want an interim title to be awarded to me in June, and they might fight for the real title in July. That sounds kind of weird. That'd almost be like if they had Conor McGregor fight for the lightweight title, and then that same month have someone else fight for an interim title for his other featherweight title. That sounds kind of odd, but well, whatever. Dumbasses.
The third, he feels disrespected by the UFC brass. He said, I'm far too old and I'm done, bro. I'm sorry, I know I need to respect my fans. I respect my fans. I'm sorry, guys. I love the sport. I love fighting. Fighting is my life, but it's too much bullshit. The guys don't respect my story, don't respect my legacy. Everything don't make sense. I don't believe this. It's fucking crazy.
I used to be good, so I should get to do whatever I want forever. That's what he's saying. Oh, it's really? Are you retiring there, Anderson? Yeah? Yeah. Everybody believes that you just decided to retire on your third grievance on Ariel Helwani's show. That's how all the champions retire. Grievance number three. I want this, I want this, I want this. Okay, I'm retiring. You didn't even give them a chance. You can't air grievances and then not give somebody a chance to correct them, you dick. So I think he's lying. I think he's a liar.
What about which part? What do you mean?
All of it, but especially his retiring.
He's a liar. Yeah, I mean, he basically closed it out by saying he's going to retire if they don't book him in an interim title fight against Yoel Romero. On what is it, UFC 212, the Brazil show.
Well, I thought that OSP fight was signed.
No, Globo or whatever that Brazilian outlet put that out there. It was like in the works, one of those deals. But nothing was signed or official there. And that fight seemed really dumb to me. Like, you would think OSP could just take him down and beat him up.
They've done dumber fights.
I know, but
he fought Derek Brunson.
No, I get that, but you would think Brunson's, you know, a lower top 10 kind of middleweight, then Silva would be competitive with him. But you would just think OSP is too big, you know, at this stage in the game for a 42-year-old Anderson. I'd rather see him fight a fat welterweight moving up to 185 as opposed to Anderson coming in out of shape and fighting a bigger dude. You know what I mean?
Give
him like Johnny Hendricks or something at 185. You know, a fight that it's a little bit of a name, but a fight he could and should win in Brazil, you know?
Oh, no, I completely agree. That's what I would do. But I'm just looking at this from, well, it's a new world with WMEI. And so who knows what they're going to do? Like, these people have not shown a lot of foresight. And some of it's kind of getting really scary. We see it already right here, another interim title fight. And fighter thinks he should get it, and he might. Or about the fact that we have a women's featherweight champion. I don't think we've heard her name on TV.
Mm.
So, like, you know, I wouldn't put it past them at all to book something stupid like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. Obviously, Silva's not happy, clearly.
He's just being emotional.
Or he might be just trying to position himself for the UL fight, but I wouldn't think he'd want to fight Yoel either. Like, that's not a good fight for him at this stage in the game.
I give him some pass because English is his second language. And, true. You know, if I was speaking French, I'd be able to communicate ideas. But, it, like, something very I would say, intricate as far as, like, I think the UFC is overextending themselves. It's not really fair that a guy like me, who'd been a longtime champion, I'd had a verbal agreement with Dana White that I'd fight George St. Pierre if he came back. Notwithstanding that occurring, now I think it's only fair that I fight Yoel Romero. And since the UFC has a history right now of doing interim title fights, I would like to have one. If I tried to say that in French, you'd be like, I want fight belt interim put on me or Yoel.
Yeah, and it could be a little lost in translation. Absolutely. We'll see where it goes. Time will tell.
I mean, he is a dick. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's probably just still upset that the UFC, he probably thinks the UFC, they reveal to the world, they try to blackmail me, make it look like I got a small penis. That's what they do. They make up that excuse with Cialis. Everyone knows Cialis is a real drug.
On the topic of interim title fights, we should mention there is another interim title fight looming. It's not signed. It hasn't been called that yet. But like you said, DeRondamy has kind of vanished.
Oh, fuck me.
No, she hasn't vanished. Like, she hasn't been kidnapped. It's not like that. But just nothing on social media. She might be injured with a hand injury. She said that after she beat Holly Holm to win the women's featherweight title, that she had a hand issue. But there's very little action going on around DeRondamy. So Cyborg is looking for a fight at UFC 214 in Anaheim on July 29th, which is also the expected date for John Jones' return, conveniently. Kind of a smart move by Cyborg, I guess.
Oh, she had been saying that a couple weeks ago, though. She said she wanted to fight then.
Right. It's probably the biggest card of the year at this point, the way the year's going. John Jones' return against Cormier, a show that did, you know, whatever, 900,000 buys the first time, and you know those guys are going to build it up, which we'll get to in a minute as well. Fuck. But she's looking for a fight with it looks like Megan Anderson at this point, the Invicta featherweight women's champion, and Anderson's up for the fight, and she wants to fight Cyborg as well. Technically, she's in Invicta and is their champion, but UFC seems like they can pull Invicta fighters whenever they want and just bring them into the UFC. So I wouldn't like Anderson's chances in that fight. I think it's too early for her. I think she gets hit a lot in her fights. If she gets hit by Cyborg a couple times, it'll probably be over pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, what's really sad is that if they fought, I would consider the winner of that the true featherweight champion of the world.
Me too.
And if they said they were making it for interim title, it would be one of the few times I wouldn't care, because I would think, okay, I actually think the person who wins this should be champion. It's not fair to DeRondamy, and in a real sport, it wouldn't happen that way. But in the world where the champion has had one fight at that weight in the company, one, like, I'm not going to give a shit if they devalue her title, because more people would probably think Cyborg's the real champion anyways, because she is the real champion. And everybody knows it. She's the champion, and she's in the company. She's fighting in the company. She's headlining in the company. Why she's not fighting for a title doesn't make any sense if you're from the outside and you don't understand that she's kind of a little weird and has drug problems.
Those go hand in hand sometimes, don't they?
Oh, do they ever.
Yeah, so if Anderson could beat Cyborg, talk about, like, a star-making moment for somebody. Whoever knocks Cyborg off, because it'll happen eventually. It's not like she's going to retire undefeated, you wouldn't think. She'll keep coming back to get paid until she loses a couple fights. Could be huge for her. But
oh, yeah. I think if Megan Anderson...
She'd be a huge dog in that fight, though.
She'd be a dog, but again, Cyborg could get old or clean overnight. Megan Anderson is young and getting better. And fuck, you know, if Anderson got the win, it would really kind of make her into this, in a very lower level. I could see the Australians going real nuts for that, having their champion. Like, because everybody who's a fan of MMA would know, like, she's the real deal. And I think, you know, what I'll call secondary non-U.S. markets, when they get a guy who's a champion for them, they really love it. You know, we've seen the staying power of Bisping for all these years, and he's just been pretty good, and the Brits love the guy. So if Megan Anderson could do it, yeah, I think she could do well, especially when you consider that the UFC already made the huge splash in Australia with women on top. So they've already kind of set a precedent where people would remember and appreciate female fighters. So I think she could actually become something if she got a win or two in the UFC, especially if she beat Cyborg.
Yeah, absolutely. I think whoever knocks her off is going to be a big star because it's going to be a major upset, and it's going to look like, I mean, you could kind of compare it to Holly Holm, although Holm obviously has lost three in a row since the Rousey fight. But Holm had a lot of pubs. She was on a lot of talk shows. She had that parade in Albuquerque. Like, she was like a hero coming off that win over Rousey. And to me, beating Cyborg's kind of a bigger deal. Cyborg's got a much longer winning streak and is scarier looking and has that appearance of being like a legit killer in the cage. So whoever beats her is going to reap the rewards. It's just a matter of who and when.
Oh, for sure. Whoever beats her becomes a star. It, obviously, no one will become as big a star as Holly became just because Ronda was such a freak show as far as popularity goes. And, you know, to the extent that Cyborg looks unbeatable, we've seen her lose in Muay Thai, and she does have the weakness of she's just kind of a juice monkey, and if she's ever clean, we don't really know. When Ronda lost to Holly, I mean, holy shit, dude. She was on that streak, and it was so crazy. Now I think about it, as you talk about this, I'm like going, if Ronda fought Cyborg, nobody would give Ronda any chance. And just 2 years ago, almost even maybe a year or 8 months ago, that would have been a joke. We would have all thought, yeah, Ronda probably beat her. She'd probably throw her, or we thought she'd do okay. And now I was going, oh, that's not even safe. Like, that's a legitimately dangerous match. I mean, holy shit. We see what Nunez can do. Cyborg's way bigger and hits way harder. Oh, man. The only thing that would come out of that is we'd know how will Ryan be able to argue with her soon-to-be husband?
Yeah, I think the other thing that kind of hurt Holm is losing to Nunez. Beating Rousey like that hurt Holm because that win doesn't mean as much now. Like, Rousey's like considered this fraud by a lot of people, which I don't think is wholly accurate, but that's kind of the story that's out there now. That Rousey was always a fraud. She was never that good. It was all hype. She has no boxing. She's terrible. And that's not because of the Holm loss.
No.
That's because of the
Armenian
Nunez loss, which did that, which in fact ended up hurting Holm even more. Granted, she had the three losses, but that win over Rousey is not as impressive anymore.
Well, it's kind of like Nate Diaz and Conor. If Conor were to go out and lose his next three fights, we wouldn't really care about Nate's win over him nearly as much. But we'd still remember him, and he'd still be a name. And same as Holly. I mean, let's face it. Holly beat Ronda, then she lost her next fight. She lost her fight after that. She just lost another fight, and yet she's still headlining in June in Singapore.
Yeah.
I mean, she's lost three in a row, and they were, you know, they weren't really competitive. It's, you know, she lost. So, and the fight sucked, but she's still on top on some level. So, I guess this all really says that Megan Anderson will be a big star.
Holm has to beat Betch Kohea, right?
How could
she lose that fight?
She can't. She has to. It might be boring, but there's no way in fucking hell she loses to Betch.
I can't imagine.
Betch is not very good. She's really not good. She's not a good fighter. She should not be in the UFC. She has very few skills or world class. She has no skills or world class. But she's in. I mean, she won a couple fights. She's kind of gritty, but she's like the definition of like below average. She would be in a company if she's a man because she's kind of famous. Like, she's not even like at a Jim Miller level, and Jim Miller's nowhere near the top. So, but you know, she's like number three or whatever the fuck she is by now. So, no.
Yeah, she definite overachiever. That's how I would describe her.
Good for her. She fucking earned it. She had all the knockouts. She got the fight with Honda. She went out there. She got another win. She shakes her ass. She's got a way to connect to people. She got another fucking main event. I didn't think that we'd ever see Betch go ahead main event two shows. I mean, holy shit. That's good for you. For somebody that doesn't speak English and you're from Brazil, you're not really actually very attractive at all, but you do have a sex appeal. So good for you, Betch.
We'll change gears. We'll go to Elite Fighters now. On Saturday night...
The fuck is that?
Daniel Cormier... What do you mean?
What the fuck is Elite Fighters?
We're going to talk about two elite fighters here.
Non-elites. I thought it was like a promotion from Korea.
No, that would be good.
It was stiffing people on pay.
There's those out there, too. But on Saturday night, and I'm guessing this is Pacific time. It's the Twitter account says Daniel Cormier. You got 10:39 p.m. on Saturday night.
I know it was Sunday night, and it was in Boston, and they called Adam Jones the N-word. That's what it was.
That's a separate issue, which we'll talk about later too. But Cormier and John Jones started going at it on Twitter on Saturday night.
I censored myself. What does
I'm guessing?
What's become of me?
You're really maturing.
Nigger. It's okay, people. It's just a word. I don't mean it. I'm going to Yale.
Congrats. So, essentially, Cormier and Jones, I'm assuming Cormier sent out this tweet at 10:39 at night, and then Jones responds at 3:32 a.m. Cormier gets back to him at 3:41 a.m.
Wait, well, what time is that? Is that East or Pacific?
It doesn't say. It just says. Okay. I'm guessing. I'm hoping it's Pacific. It's funnier if it's Pacific.
Yeah, because like if it's East Coast, it's not too bad. If it's Pacific, it's like, oh, somebody's drinking.
No, there's definitely booze involved here. And then the last tweet by Jones goes back to Cormier at 5:58 a.m., which even in New Mexico is still probably almost, what, 3 a.m.? 4 a.m., maybe. Either way, it's late.
They're 3 hours behind. They're three behind you.
So that would still be 3 a.m. on a Saturday night.
Unless he's in Hong Kong, there's no real way that 5 a.m. is a good time anywhere.
So it goes like this. Cormier says, "No, I didn't. Don't always believe what you think you see. Your eyes lie to you sometimes." And that's about his first fight with Jones.
Oh, I thought you said that randomly. I'm like, that's a weird one to throw out in the world.
And then Jones responds, "Man, I can't wait to pop you in the mouth." Cormier says back, "Funny that you would use that word, LOL, pop, like pop positive, Papa Molly, Papa Cialis. I could go on for days, LOL." Jones writes back, "LOL, finally a decent joke. LOL, let's not forget me popping your cherry." That's how it ends. Well, that was the one at 5:58 a.m. And that got 6,465 likes at 6 a.m. on Twitter. Jones has a weird way of making comebacks that don't totally always make sense. Like, he was talking about getting in Cormier's ass one time, I think, also as well. And I was saying he's popping his cherry. Like, I don't know that Jones knows what these terms actually mean.
Did you ever see Trainwreck?
Yeah, with Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The part where John Cena's her boyfriend and all of his comebacks are like, I will get in there and I will lick your ass. And like that's John Jones' approach. Like, dude, you keep this up and I will fucking stick it deep in you. I will push that shit back. Let's go.
It's just like that. Do you, I guess my question is this. Do you buy the grudge between them? Because I do more than most because they are very dissimilar in a lot of ways. Cormier seems to be, you know, a lot more straight-laced. He's not getting into trouble. He's a family man. You see these clips of him with his kids, and he's making these goofy videos with Popeye's chicken and dancing around eating cake. Like, he seems like a genuinely nice person. And then you've got John Jones, who's just, like, out of control on coke binges, crashing into people, hitting runs, all sorts of stuff, getting in trouble with the law, drag racing, whatever it might be. And the genuine – they both get under each other's skin because Cormier will call Jones out for that stuff. But Jones still has the win over Cormier, and Cormier can never get past that.
And Jones knows that it bugs Cormier.
Right.
You know what they are? They're Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. That's exactly what they're like. You know, on the Bret Hart Shawn Michaels in 1996, both in and out of the ring.
So like Jones, obviously Jones is Michaels, and Cormier would be Bret.
Yeah, because like on some level, I feel like this all started like with Cormier kind of like playing it up a little bit as a work, and then Jones was being a little bit of a work, and Cormier kind of got what he's going at. But then Jones said something that got under Cormier's skin, and then Jones recognized that and he likes that kind of thing. But then Cormier kept doing it, and I don't think Jones is necessarily pure pro wrestler, but I think he's a lot closer to it than Cormier is. I think Cormier kind of worked himself, and now it's at this point where like it became real. And I think that Jones sees Cormier, and I think Jon Jones looks down on everyone. I think he's very aloof and doesn't think anybody's at his level. But if anybody's close to him, it's Cormier, and he knows like of all the people in the world, he can't lose to Cormier. As the only one, the only person who would beat him, where there would be something besides the loss to deal with, and so he comes back by reminding Cormier that he had anal sex with him on a pay-per-view for the first time.
I think the genesis of their feud was before Cormier was even in the UFC. Like, they met up backstage or something, and somebody introduced Cormier to Jones, and Jones claims he didn't even know who he was and found out he was a wrestler. Like, Jones had to know who Cormier was. He was fighting in Strikeforce at the time, and he's like an Olympic wrestler, and Jones was an amateur wrestler. It's like you had to know who Daniel Cormier was.
Jones is a moron. He's very self-involved.
We're going to presume he's so self-involved he's never heard of Daniel Cormier. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But when introduced to him, Jones says, "Oh, you're a wrestler, huh? I bet I could take you down." Like, who gets introduced to a person who they've never met and don't know and says that immediately? Like, what kind of arrogant douchebag does that? Nobody.
A dude with a world champion.
I've never met anybody who behaves that way when you meet somebody. Like, even, and Jones, like, thinks he's just joking around, but it pissed Cormier off, and Cormier held this grudge. Like, this guy's a dick. And he's felt that way from day one, the first day he met him, and just all their interactions since then, the ESPN stuff, the off-the-air part of that interview, the brawl. Then Jones immediately after goes on Instagram and is filming himself in the hallway saying, "Cormier, you felt so weak. I kicked your ass. You're so weak." Like, immediately after. Then he takes it down off Instagram. Like, the whole thing.
Oh, I love that gimmick.
The whole feud is great, and I think they're going to keep it going, and it should be a big fight if Jones makes it to the fight.
Yeah, it's great because it's a real-life version of two adults, one of whom was almost 40, playing out a high school drama. You got, you know, just the popular jock versus the quiet nerd who's going to finally rise up and stand his ground and show him what's what. And it's hilarious because, again, both guys, I think, really believe it. I can completely understand the first time they met, Jones said that, and Jones probably didn't think, well, who would care? I don't think he did it necessarily maliciously. I don't think he thought, I'll take him down a peg. I think he got that jock mentality. Like, I saw it a lot with Matt Hughes, where he just, like, he comes across as a dick, and sure, he is in the real world, but in the jock world that he lives in, guys say that to each other. It's the old that's locker room talk, but there is a way that guys talk in locker rooms, and, you know, you just give each other shit, and if somebody can't take a joke, well, you really, really have to hammer it home, because you think you're doing them a solid or whatever. I don't know. Maybe just bullies, when they smell blood, they just attack. And I think Jon Jones, I mean, that's what he is. Again, he's been Superman forever. He's never suffered a single fucking repercussion for any of his actions. He parties, he does coke, he drinks, he still wins titles. He crashes his car, he picks up, he's probably banging underage chicks. He's got cocaine in his system. Nothing actually happens. Oh, he gets suspended for a couple of months. He can give a shit. He got money. He's never going to jail. He's suffered no financial repercussions that are immediate. He has no social repercussions. He can just keep doing what he wants.
Yeah. At this point, it seems like it. I mean, it becomes a question of how many fights is he going to miss and how much money is he losing out on not being around. It's like, eventually you got to get in the cage to get paid. So we'll see with Jon Jones. I want him to fight. I'd like to see him fight again. And even Cormier now is calling him out. He was calling him out for that OSP fight, where OSP took the fight on 2 weeks' notice and had his arm broken in the second round, and Jones still couldn't win the fight. So he's bringing up USADA stuff, where he's talking about Jones's low testosterone levels. Like, Cormier is not afraid to get in there and call him out, and he basically said he's going to beat Jones because of USADA now. So it'll be interesting, and I'll be curious to see if Cormier keeps pushing that when they really start doing the real media for this fight.
He probably will, because I think, again, he wants to actually try his hardest to truly insult Jones, and I think he thinks this might get under Jones' skin. problem is, I don't think anything gets under Jones' skin because he's so aloof. He doesn't even consider. He truly doesn't care what other people think.
Yeah.
He just doesn't give a fuck. So you can say anything you want. I mean, there's going to be some sort of trigger. Somebody's going to find something. But it's not going to be Daniel Cormier. He's just not evil enough. He's just too nice of a guy to find that one thing where you'd be like, oh, yeah, John? Well, I know about the two abortions you paid for. You're a murderer. Like, he's not. Cormier would never drop that hammer. I would, yeah. But I'm not Cormier.
No. Similar, though.
Very similar, yes.
Francis Ngannou, a UFC heavyweight contender. I think he's 5-0 in the UFC now. He's coming off a knockout win over Andrei Arlovsky. He has moved from France, one of your favorite countries, to Las Vegas. He's hoping to take his UFC career to the next level, he says. Do you think moving to Las Vegas is a positive step?
Well, first of all, for the record, just to dispel any idea that he may have been being sarcastic, France actually is one of my favorite countries, for real.
I was being genuine.
I know, but, you know, with my personality and persona and who I am, people could easily think I don't like them. Look, Vegas is better than France. Anything's going to be better than France as far as what training you're going to get, which is no slight on the French, just they don't have the facilities. Look, there's world-class guys in Vegas. There's world-class trainers there. You can get good work, and at the end of the day, as long as who you're working with now is better than what you had before, it can only be a positive. I think that, you know, look, all fighters pretty much come to the United States these days. All the top guys in Brazil, they all come to the United States, not just for MMA, for jiu-jitsu, all kinds of shit. Like, we're just where it's at, and...
Yeah, I'm just surprised you didn't go to, like, a more... I mean, I guess there's some... I'm trying to think of... Couture still out there in Vegas?
Yeah, there's
Syndicate,
extreme,
maybe?
There's Syndicate, there's Extreme Couture. Yeah. And again, there's just guys who maybe they're not super well known yet, but they're producing good fighters and they could train you. And look, yeah. It's possible Ngannou was in Vegas once, saw the Parisian hotel, and thought, oh yeah, I can live there. I'll be like at home.
Yeah, he might have thought that. It struck me as interesting as opposed to going to, you know, Jackson's or Duke Rufus or like a bigger name camp, ATT, whatever it might be. I'm going to go out to Vegas of all places in the world isn't necessarily the best place to focus and train.
Well, again, if you're from France, you don't obviously probably know much about American geography. You're gonna want to like probably pick someplace that you've heard of, and right. You know New York doesn't have anything that anybody knows about or cares about, and like it's gonna be like, well, you can go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where if you're an American, you have to look it up. If let alone if you're French, you can go to Coconut Creek, Florida, and you're gonna be like, what?
That sounds nice.
Yeah, but still, like I've never heard of that. Or you can go to Las Vegas. Like right. if you're gonna go to France and train, and somebody's like, you can go to Arcachon. You can go to Agen, or you can go to Paris. You can be like, well, I know about Paris. I don't know what the fuck those other ones have. No, it's a little different because I think every place in France is beautiful. But, like, if you're going to London or England, be like, do you want to go to Wolverhampton or do you want to go to London? And it wouldn't matter if Wolverhampton had the best trainers in the world. You'd be like, yeah, I want to fucking live in London. Thanks. I don't know where Wolverhampton is, but I'm not fucking living there. I'm not going to live in Gloucester or anything else either. I'm going to live in a place I can find a map. So, thanks.
Did you see Paige VanZant's weird TikTok ad?
Yeah, I saw it several times in a row, let me tell you.
That was weird. Like, did she just do that on her own, you think? Or do you think that was something Reebok pushed on her or UFC? Because essentially she made this weird Reebok ad with her phone and then promptly took it down from all her social media. But, of course, everybody captured it. And essentially she was like, wearing like this workout outfit.
It's awesome that you clearly don't want to describe it.
Well, I don't even know how to describe. I don't wear clothes like that often. So it was like this workout thing, and she lifts her shirt up. You can see her stomach, and then she's like lying on the rug, kind of rolling around. The whole thing was just odd. Like, I know she was trying to be like sexy or whatever, but it was just like came off as like fucking desperate. And
she needed to say it's up all night.
And creepy, and she's like, hey guys, why don't you buy this for your mom or your girlfriend? I'm like, what the hell is she doing?
It was
and
like an 18-year-old cam girl that's never actually tried to seduce a man.
But why, like I don't get
sexy.
No, I understand, but from a sales perspective, did anybody buy any Reebok stuff because of that, or were they like, this girl is desperate? Like, that was my take. I'm like, oh god,
whatever
anything
she was selling,
a turnoff, yeah.
Like, whatever she was selling, we know about it more now than we did before.
I knew about Reebok before. I wasn't buying it before either.
Yeah, but she tried to do a video. I mean, it just looks stupid. It just reinforces every stereotype of her.
Right.
Whether she took it down on purpose, I don't know. She may be John Jonesing it. It was dumb. I thought it was clearly like she was being paid for, because I know a lot of these social media people do, and they get really good money.
It's crazy.
When I hear about, like, some of the Kardashians or whatever, like, they probably, like, I drink a Coke, and it's like, they get, like, $2 million. So I completely just, I have no clue how that shit works money-wise, yeah. But I know that there's money there. And the way she was just so, like, and this is my new Reebok. And she was just so, like, salesperson-y about it. I'm like, wow, you knew you had to say Reebok three times in the first 45 seconds or something like that. And again, otherwise, it just looked like a little girl trying to be sexy. And part of that's because she does look like a little girl. But it was just like, you look stupid. Like, this is something, like, if a dude was FaceTiming with this chick, she'd be doing this. And he'd be like, yeah, baby, that's really, really good. And he'd be sitting there the whole time, just take off your fucking shirt. Take off your I don't care. I don't care if you want to tease me. I don't need to be teased. This is stupid. Just fucking take it off. It was just annoying.
I agree with most of that. Dan Henderson, we're going to really shift gears here from Paige VanZant's sex tape to Dan Henderson. He resurfaced in the news this
sex
week.
Tape?
What? It's the closest thing for now.
Oh, did you, by the way, I don't know, quick aside, but did you know Tom Lawler is fighting this weekend?
Like wrestling or?
No, he's in a submission grappling match.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I can't think of what the name of it is now, but he's taking on Fabio Prada, the.
Ooh.
Yeah, just coach for Team Alpha Male.
Right, that
he's gonna get tapped bad.
Yeah, is he bigger than Prada though? Is he a smaller guy?
Actually, they're probably about the same size.
Really? Okay.
Prada's a big dude. Like, he's not your typical small Brazilian, and it's very weird that of all the Brazilians in the world, Team Alpha Male found a giant one.
Right. Yeah. I presumed he was Lawler would be the bigger guy. But is it Sonnen's thing or is it something different?
Might be Sonnen's thing. I can't remember the name of it now, but I'll probably look it up here on my iPad. I liked what he did.
Well, I'll at least watch Lawler's entrance. That's
he'll have free reign to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's what he's good for, right? Yeah. I don't know. I did not know that, but now I do. So Dan Henderson, who's coming off a loss to John Jones in submission grappling, is actually doing an autograph signing with Tito Ortiz for Bellator in May. Obviously, Hendo has a relationship with Bellator president Scott Coker. They work together in Strikeforce, and there's a history there. Henderson actually left the UFC off the first Bisping win and went to Strikeforce and signed with Coker. So clearly, they're on some kind of terms and know each other, and now he's back in Bellator to a degree for this autograph signing deal. Do you think this could lead to him getting back into the cage?
Yeah, possibly.
He's so old, man, and it's
Bellator's
been like
desperate.
I know, but is he like I know we got into this probably if it was last week or the week before, where it's like these old guys just keep coming back, and if the money's enough, they'll come back, and it's like, I don't want to see Henderson fight again. Like, he was competitive with Bisping. Some people thought he won that fight, but it's over, man. He's gotten destroyed and knocked out so many times, just like flattened.
Feeder's going to fight again, so.
Right. But, I mean, the only thing with Bellator, in Bellator's favor, is they can put him in it with a guy who may not kill him. They can give him a favorable matchup. They can protect him because, again, it's not all the sharks in the UFC, all these killers. They could bring Tito back. They could give him he could fight Bonner. You know what I mean? They could figure something out where they could protect him where he's not going to get killed. But I don't like the idea of a guy who's got, you know, over a half dozen knockout losses at 46 getting punched in the head anymore.
No, neither do I. And I think that's really the biggest problem for me, is that there is no real safe fight for him. Like, it's just, any fight is dangerous at his age. But if he wants to fight again, I don't know. I mean, I would have said it one time, the UFC wouldn't do it, but the new UFC might. But Bellator would probably give him more money, and they do seem to be the home for wayward boys, so maybe it happens. At the very least, I feel like Bellator is probably more willing to work with him in a non-fighting capacity and get him these kind of like immediate deals where he's on TV and he smiles and he does a thing. And like, the UFC doesn't have to or doesn't want to cheapen themselves by like, oh, we're going to have, hey, come out before the show and watch one of our former legends sign some baseball cards in the parking lot or something like that. They won't hoard themselves out like that, whereas Bellator will.
In a moment of what actually seems like decent booking to me, correct me if I'm wrong here, at UFC 212, you mentioned Vitor Belfort. He does have a fight booked, and it's against Nate Marquardt. To me, both guys are old, washed-up steroid cheats, so it makes sense.
I guess. It's
Vitor. Who else can Vitor fight at this point? You know what I mean?
I have no real idea. Anderson?
Yeah, but I don't think they want to fight for some reason. Both of them weren't up for that fight.
Yeah, I feel like if I'm going to watch Vitor fight, it either has to be against somebody old with a name or somebody young who I think could be good. Nate Marquardt's this old and nobody cares. Yeah. But it doesn't matter. Whoever wins, I guess if Vitor wins, I'd want to see him win more than I want to see Marquardt win, because right. It'd be more fun, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be, it's at UFC 212 in Brazil, so it's a fight that Vitor could win, and there's not a lot in the middleweight division.
I think you hit your switch in your microphone.
Can you not hear me?
No, I can. It's just you're like you were before you lost some of the bass.
Okay. Maybe I hit the cord. Better?
No, not really.
I didn't touch anything on the mic.
I may have just completely lost my mind.
It's possible. All right. Anyway, yeah, it's a fight you think Vitor could win. You know what I mean? And there's not many. There's not a lot of fights out there I would favor him in the middleweight division. Even like a guy like Sam Alvey, I think Alvey would like knock Vitor out. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, he's done. It's over. So anyway, maybe it's a fight he can win and get a big pop in Brazil and ride off into the sunset and start his Legends League everyone's clamoring for.
Yeah, him and Dan Henderson go out there and beat each other's brains in all the time.
Another fight that's rumored, it's in motion, is a fight for Anthony Pettis. He's scheduled to possibly fight Jim Miller at UFC 213 at 155 pounds. So that featherweight experiment seems like it's come to an early end.
Yeah, kind of sad, I guess, that this is where Pettis is at, but it's also, I think, very fair. I think this is where he's at. The fight interests me. I think it's kind of even. If you're Pettis, this is do or die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's got to win. Like, I know that they want stars more than ever before, but holy shit. Like, Rory McDonald is way better and probably just as big a name, and they let him go. And you gotta win eventually. Even if you keep losing real close fights, you still have to win. That is the point of the sport. You can't just lose forever unless you're Leonard Garcia.
Yeah, I mean, they were pushing Pettis like he was going to be a huge star for the company, which I never really honestly saw. Like, he's a great fighter, but to me, he was kind of always boring. He wasn't real engaging. But he's lost four of his last five, and the one win he has was over Charles Oliveira, where I felt like he lost a couple of those rounds and was probably going to lose the fight until he caught Oliveira in that guillotine. So he could easily be 0-5 in his last five. And granted, he's fighting, you know, Rafael Dos Anjos, Eddie Alvarez, Barboza, and Max Holloway. He's fighting the very best guys in the world. But at a certain point, you're just going to be a stepping stone for guys coming up. And even though he's young, he's almost that guy now. If he can't beat Jim Miller, it's over. It's over for me. He's 30. He should be at his peak right now. He should be truly at his peak in his last four of his last five. Something went wrong there for him.
Yeah, he's a 30, but he's a fast twitch muscle 30, and those guys do break down way quicker. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of sad. Again, you have to win your fights because a lot of those losses, like the Holloway loss, he got beat. The other one, you know, Eddie Alvarez, that was a really close fight. Some of the other fights were really close fights, or at least competitive. But again, you can be competitive, but at a certain point, you got to win. And I guess, you know, really, when you drop down to the Jim Miller level, that's the fight where if you can be in the UFC, you're going to win that fight. If you lose to Jim Miller, he's a perfect, you know, he's a perfect gateway guy, really. Also, I looked it up, and it's Fabio Prado versus Tom Lawlor. It's an Onnit Invitational on May 6th.
Huh. So
it sounds like, I don't know, it's the 10th Planet in Austin. So maybe Joe Rogan's just giving people money to do shit now. Nobody else in the card anybody would really know of or anything like that. I don't recognize any of these names. Oh, I guess I recognize a couple, but they're all super exclusive grappler types, so. Yeah, I guess that's the main event.
Interesting. I'll look forward to Tom Lawlor's entrance and probably quick exit. Anything else going on in the MMA world?
I don't think so. You'd know better, more than I would, which is an indictment on me. Or a positive for you. One of those.
I'm flipping through Twitter right now. And I'm trying to figure this out. Maybe you can help me. There's talk that UFC's created a 125-pound women's division.
Why not? I mean, at least that division would have fighters we know who are pretty good.
Hang on. I gotta...
Oh, here. Artem Lobov says that fighting Duhu Choi next makes sense. Fuck you, Artem. Go away.
Oh, my God. Yeah, 1 hour ago. Twitter's good. I know it sounds pathetic, but I get most of my news from Twitter. The UFC will finally add a women's flyweight. Finally! This is already poorly written. The UFC will finally add a women's flyweight division with the launch of the new season of The Ultimate Fighter with filming set to begin in July. So we're going to get another Ultimate Fighter season no one will watch. And a division that no one's asking for. The new season will feature a cast made up of entirely 125-pound women's fighters, with the winner being crowned the first ever champion in the division. The format is similar to season 20 of The Ultimate Fighter, where the women's strawweight division was introduced with Carla Esparza winning the show to become the first champion at 115 pounds. Again, something nobody remembers. Tryouts will take place on Tuesday, May 23rd. Blah, blah, blah.
I should have checked my email. I bet I got a pressure on this.
Notable names on the UFC roster previously competed at 125 pounds include Jessica Eye and Joanne Calderwood. It's weird, too, because, what's her name? Letourneau there. She just went to Bellator because they're making a 125-pound division. Like, I think that she announced that this week or last week. It was recent. Now UFC's coming out with their own 125-pound division, which is odd.
Hey, here's a press release. Yeah, look at that.
Figure. All right.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd rather have that than 145, that's for sure. And I think it's...
Don't you think it just waters things down even more, though? Like, in this time where there's so many champions and we're bitching about interim title fights and... titles meaning less. I mean, it gets to the point where the title just doesn't draw anymore.
I definitely think it does feel like more of the same. And we're just like, oh gosh, another title that could have an interim title for it. But I do think there's going to be a lot of talent at 125. So it's not as, like, 145 is stupid. It's being created for one person, and you didn't get that one person. You brought up two people that sucked at a lower weight class, and, like, nobody gives a shit. Even if Cyborg fights, she's got nobody to fight. We talked about her and Megan Anderson, and that's the only fight. 125, I think there's going to be a huge run of girls trying to get there. I think it's going to be a good weight class. I always feel like 135 is almost kind of too big for a lot of the girls. Mm-hmm. And plus, you're going to... I think you're going to for sure see... Guarantee you, Joanna starts making noise about wanting to fight for two titles. Everybody wants the two titles, and that's she's been talking about she would fight at 125 for a title, so I think she'll for sure run to try to get that two title fight. So you're going to probably have more girls at that weight class that you kind of know already. And you're going to see the tweeners like Jessica Eye, and if she'd been around, Misha Tate would probably have tried it. And hell, maybe Ronda. Fuck, maybe that's what they're trying to do. Lure Ronda back with a 125-pound weight class.
I can't imagine her trying to make that cut, though. That she always looked really drawn and out. Like some of those like interviews right after the weigh-ins, she didn't always look that great. Where it was like, ugh. I thought a lot of her freaking out on home was because she was so dehydrated. But
oh, probably. But she's an idiot. She'll try anything.
Well, what would she weigh in the Olympics? 147 or something? It's like she was heavy. Like even yeah, maybe low 150s.
But she was on the Ultimate Fighter that one time and. She wasn't even, like, in training days or anything like that. She was walking around, like, 150-ish. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's 25 pounds, which is a lot. But she's probably got a little bit she could drop weight-wise. I think she really, really, really wanted to do it. She'd make it.
That's Derek Lewis would make it.
Derek Lewis only had best of taste.
He only likes her when she cuts weight.
Well, he's a smart, smart man, you know. Yeah. Derek Lewis is who we should all write in for president next time. Even I imagine he's probably not even eligible.
Because he's not to be 35 to be president, or is that senator? 35?
You studied history, for fuck's sake.
Fuck off. It was 20 years ago.
Yeah, you have to be 30.
Hang on. Time out. I get it right, and you're giving me shit about it?
Yeah, because you even thought you were wrong for a split second.
I agree myself. I like to hedge my bets. What can I tell you?
You need to have more confidence in yourself, son, because you were right. It's 35 for president. 30 for senator.
But here's the thing. If you're confident and you seem confident and you're wrong, which one of us does, like, you seem worse than the person who's not sure about it right.
Nope. No, it's very simple. I've learned this transcript, actually. If you're confident on something, if you're at least with the ballpark of being right, I can't be like, I think that the sky is red, be confident. It doesn't work that way. But if you tell somebody, like, I think the sky is an off green, you're really confident about it, if it turns out it's actually, like, an off blue, but it's kind of greenish, people will just remember that you're really confident about something. Like, I do this all the time with cases. I usually have a very good idea of when a case took place, but I'm not always sure exactly of the year. It could be 1910, could be 1912. If I just say, yes, in the case of Marbury versus Madison in 1913 in Alabama, this blah, 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 blah happened. Well, I remember the important stuff, and if I get the date wrong, people aren't going to remember the date that I said. They're just going to remember that I knew the date. So I get a little added benefit of looking smart that way.
Somebody who's not looking smart is Colbert. He's taking some heat from people for comments he made about President Trump yesterday. In his opening monologue, he said the following. This is to Trump. Sir, you attract more skinheads and free Rogaine. You talk like a sign language gorilla who got hit in the head. In fact, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's cock holster. So this is weird to me for a couple of reasons. One, this is like network TV. You usually can't say cock holster, and I think it got beeped, but it was clear he said cock holster. Like, and that's a weird thing to say. Who says that? But, like, he's getting, like, there's fire Colbert hashtags and this movement to get him off the air and all this stuff. Because people are saying it's homophobic, which I'm not sure that it is. And he's a comedian. It's a joke. It's his job. Not all jokes are perfect. Not all of them are funny. You got to take the – it's not like Brian Williams or Dan Rather or some real news guy. He's a comic and he made a joke and people want him fired for it. Is this more of that, you know, Berkeley sort of thing run amok?
It's just people looking to score points. The people are giving him any shit. Like, it's just virtue signaling from both sides. And you don't usually see it, like, in theory as much from the right. But they're still doing it just as much like Vox saying, this is a homophobic remark. And like they're just trying to tell everybody, look how woke we are. We really pay attention. We know what's going on. You know he's not a real homophobe. He made a fucking joke. And the right is calling him on it. And again, they don't really – they don't think he's a homophobe. Two, most of them probably don't think homophobia is wrong. but they still bring it up because it's a way to, you know, knock around some guy that they don't like. And I mean, I didn't like the thing with the cockle. It just felt really, really crass. And it doesn't mean it being on network TV. I mean, ideally, I don't care. But so long as we do hold network TV to a higher standard, mm-hmm. I mean, these shows are taped, so there's no excuse for airing unbleeped. The fact is that even if they bleeped it, they could have edited it out. They could have just put the segment. So somebody at CBS, I don't know why, and again, it's because I have a nostalgic personality probably, but when he like said at the beginning, like right before he said cock, he's like, and this, I'm on the Tiffany Network. And by emphasizing that, I know he's trying to say, like, look, I'm on the most prestigious network, but I still have to talk this way. And all I thought was, dude, you're, like, holding yourself out on the classy network, and you're saying cock holster. It just seemed dumb. I thought the whole rant was, it felt pandering to me. Like, he's just like, I'm going to hit the high note. I'm going to get the crowd really angry. It should be really stupid that and pathetic that a comedian thinks that the president cares at all what he has to say. We do live in a time where that's not the case. This is in the old days where you'd be like, really, dude, you think the president gives a fuck if you said that? No, you know that Trump was on the phone to Les Moonves. He's like, I want that fucker dead. I want him castrated. And I want him excommunicated.
But, I mean, is saying Trump blows Putin, is that even homophobic?
I know why they said it.
I get it, but I don't know. A guy blowing a guy is bad. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what it says. It's not, he didn't, I mean, that happens in the world, and fine shit. You know what I mean? Like,
no, but the point is, why is it a shameful thing for Trump to be his cuckoldster? The reason it's shameful is because being gay is shameful. Like, if he said, like, you know, you're Vladimir Putin's guy that bangs all the hot chicks, we would be like, well, that's not much of an insult. So if you're saying that the idea of him giving a blowjob is something to be shameful about, then I understand why people are like, that's homophobic. There's a way to do the joke where, like, you say it in a way that is clear that it's shameful for Trump to do it. But the way he presented it was, it would be shameful for anybody to do this. And that's why the insult works. And that's the problem with insults. Insults, anytime they get into the realm of, you know, anything to do with sexuality or whatever, they have to play on stereotypes. Again, I don't think he's homophobic. I think he said it. I think it was the words he thought would be shocking and would resonate. And the truth is, it does. Because if you say, you know, the only thing you are is Vladimir Putin's cock holster, that's way better than the only thing you do is you like to perform oral fellatio on the president of Russia in a homosexual manner. Like, it's kind of funny if you say it in the right way, but for the most part, it doesn't have quite the oomph of cock holster versus individual gauges in a consenting sexual act between two adult men that in no way should be forbidden, despite what the state of Texas says. Actually, that would work too. I did better than you did, Colbert.
Obviously. So we'll see what happens with Colbert. Probably nothing will come of it, and his ratings will be better because that's just how the world works. Facebook. Are you familiar with that social media platform? You've heard of Facebook?
Boy, am I.
It is closing in on 2 billion users. Did you see this story? I'll tell you more about it.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead with the story. I have a joke.
I'll talk for a little bit. So Facebook is closing in on 2 billion monthly users and estimates revenues for the first quarter of 2017 at $8 billion. There's a lot of losers who like to go online and post pictures of cats and their families and do stuff on Facebook. Who would have ever thought, you know, 10 years ago, that something like that would be making $8 billion in revenue a quarter?
I mean, I remember when Facebook began, I was like, what's Facebook? Like, you had to, like, be in college to use it. And that was, like, my senior year of college is kind of like when it came out. That was 2005. Mm. And now I was doing – and the reason why this is rumors to me is when you say it'll have upwards of 2 billion users – and earlier today, you know, you and I were talking about how, according to some survey, only 15% of the world has a freedom of press. So there are more people with Facebook than have access to freedom of press. Like, that's insane. I know that Facebook will, I guess, engage in some censoring shit for some countries.
Yeah.
But to the extent that it does, otherwise Facebook is the single most powerful fucking entity on the planet as far as if they really wanted to change things. They could have a, like, they couldn't do shit in the United States. They could do a little bit, but the United States is just too many platforms. But if you're in some of these countries, India or China or whatever, I don't know about India, but whatever, some repressive regime country, Iran, that might be the only chance you have to, only chance you have to see anything not censored. So Mark Zuckerberg's the most powerful person on the planet, maybe.
Yeah, it's even crazier because just from a year ago, they've had 76% growth in net profits specifically. It's just crazy. And a lot of it's, because of phones, more and more people are getting, you know, iPhones, smartphones, and that's just becoming part of everyone's everyday life now, whether you're 13 or 73, it's like everybody's got a cell phone, a smartphone, and are constantly on it. They've got apps. They know how to work them now. It's just like it's exploded in the last few years as opposed to having to sit at a computer, a laptop, or whatever to go on Facebook and all the stuff. Everybody can do it on their phone now, so it's so much easier, so much more convenient. And the thing's just still taken off after, you know, 10, 11 years of being around. You would have thought it would have kind of like died out at some point. Kind of, what was that other thing that... Yeah, MySpace just totally dropped off. And you would have thought something else would have come along and kind of taken over. But Facebook is still going strong, man. Even with, you know, Instagram and Snapchat, they're still a distant second and third. So good for Facebook. They're doing something right.
Yeah, you know, from the beginning, they were smart. They recognized that the future lied in their ability to monetize mobilization. And so I know they worked really hard on figuring out good algorithms and how to get the ads in the right place. Because, you know, the United States, we have decent internet. But actually parts of, like, Europe and now that have really good internet. And it's really just the simple function of it's physically smaller, so it's way easier and cheaper to lay the lines necessary. But, like, in Africa, everybody has a cell phone. And I saw a story once when they're talking about how in Africa, Bitcoin is a huge deal. It's very important in Africa because when you have currencies that are so fucking useless and fluctuate every week, something like Bitcoin can be very steady, and everybody in Africa has a cell phone. I think there's probably more cell phones per person in Africa than there's almost in the United States. It's just a huge deal there. So Facebook getting onto mobile that way, I can see, you know, a lot of people in Africa or China or whatever where they open up. This is the first time they've ever had anything like this. You know, here in the United States, we're sitting there going, oh, Facebook. Now, I got Twitter. I got Instagram. I got Snapchat. I got Bumble. I got whatever the next one is going to be. And we're kind of like, we can go by or whatever. Like, we live a life where we choose to not have technology. We're so spoiled. And they're living in a world where, like, they're like, holy shit, I can talk to somebody and the government's not listening to it. This is amazing. I can't believe it. Oh, praise be to Allah.
Funny thing is, the government probably is listening, right?
Oh, probably, but they, on some level, they, even if they're not being free, they think that they might be free. And I think that's, like, a really big deal. The idea of freedom, like, yes, it sounds all rah-rah 1776 shit here, but being free is important, but thinking you could be free is basically the same thing, because once that starts germinating inside the consciousness and hope of a people, it doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. Like that was why, you know, the Soviet Union and Communist China worked for so long, for so well, is because they could control all mass communication. That's why every dictator and totalitarian regime, always the first thing they do is try to get control of the media. And now we live in an era where you can't. It's too difficult. Donald Trump couldn't stop the media in America if he wanted to. Yes, he could put pressure on and make things difficult, and some of his ideas and libel laws, they're not good, and they should be opposed. But even if he gets it, like, you could pass the strictest libel laws in the world, and yeah, Facebook. It's just going to be some 13-year-old kid going, I don't give a fuck. I don't have any money you can take from me. I'm going to call you a fag. And that's just what it's going to be. So you can't stop it. It's beautiful. There's this total, complete freedom around the world. And you know, futures can be made up of the countries that figure out how to deal with it. And I don't think it's going to be good news for some of these fucking crazy authoritarians.
Yeah, eventually you would think they would be gone. Yes. Do you have ticks, you know, those parasites out in Chicago?
Well,
I don't know. I don't know how they work. We have them around here. And apparently we've got a big new scary tick disease, tick-borne disease called...
We probably have a lot more of them than you do. We have, like, hunting and stuff.
Yeah, but we've got, like, deer and coyotes and stuff out here. Really? Holy shit. Yeah. Yeah, we do. I swear to God.
I don't know, I assume the whole New England is just very densely populated. Like, nobody's like, I'm going to go hunt in Massachusetts. You go hunt in Minnesota.
When you think about Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, you think densely populated?
Oh, I forget that they're part of that. Yeah.
It's the biggest portion of New England.
Land-wise, but I don't even really think of that as being part of America. It's so, like, removed and, like...
It's not removed. Compared to, like, Idaho and the Dakotas, it's removed.
Yeah, I just realized, for you, it's like, for me, like, Idaho and the Dakotas, they're not removed at all. Like, I go there all the time, so it's probably the same thing. We're like, no, that's just, like, that's the hinterlands that we all kind of look at and be like, yes, if the apocalypse comes, we'll all go live there, because nobody lives there. We'll drink our maple syrup and have no low taxes. It'd be great.
It's all, you know, three electoral votes. That's what we're talking about with all those states, you know? But anyway... There's
in Maine splits theirs.
Yeah, they're crazy.
So does Nebraska.
Okay.
They're the only two states I think that don't have a winner take all vote.
That's better anyway, right?
Colorado might do it also, but I think it's okay.
I don't like electoral college, man. I don't.
Here's the thing. I think if you look around the world right now, if you take the 50,000 foot view, you look at things like that and you go, oh, actually, I'm really okay with the way that the Founding Fathers set everything up, because would you really want Donald Trump to have total power? Like, you see all the fights he's had right now with his own party and Congress, right, and he can't get shit passed. It's like, oh, yeah, this fucking pseudo-democracy thing we got? Oh, yeah, that's saving us from the crazy guy who picks fights with Saturday Night Live. Not even people. Characters on Saturday Night Live. Like, Donald Trump, he probably gets angry. It's like, oh, I hate you, Harry Caray. And be like, what? No, I hate you, Waterboy, or whatever the fuck it would be. I'm trying to think of a famous character of Saturday Night Live. I hate you, Knight of the Roxbury. And like, I'm glad that guy has a little bit of a checkered past.
I agree. I was more strictly just talking about electoral college. I'm not a fan.
I know, but it all goes in the same does. Deal. And you know what? You know what? This last time it worked better than ever before, because guess what? Fuck you, Hillary Clinton. You didn't campaign in Wisconsin once. You deserve to lose. You ignored an entire group of people, and you paid the price for it. People in Wisconsin matter.
I'm not saying
with all their cheese and fat.
I'm not saying Trump shouldn't have won. He won under the current rules. I would just change the rules if it were me. It's like, whoever gets the most votes should win. Like, it's fucking simple. But whatever. It's okay. I get why it's that way. And it is what it is, and it'll probably never change because nobody cares and nobody remembers, but... it's not how I would do it, which is fine. I'm okay with that.
We can't pass like basic things like, should we have bullets for the military? And everybody's like, yes, no, there's like a 50-50 split on that. We're not going to amend the Constitution anytime soon.
I know. Can you imagine how hard that would be now?
Oh, it would be impossible. Like, the only way you could amend it would be if somebody's like, oh, it turns out there's a loophole that says that men are allowed to murder women whenever they want. Go at it, guys. Then you can probably make everybody be like, okay, we'll amend that one real quick. Otherwise, I mean, fuck me. If slavery is around today, they wouldn't be amending no constitution. They wouldn't be able to... I mean, I guess they didn't really amend it back then. They just killed all the people that wouldn't vote for it, and then they amended it. But still, like, that's what it would have taken. And you know, we're that highly, you know, hyper-partisan. I mean, fuck, pick an issue. Pick a single... issue in the world. Imagine somebody wanted to have a constitutional amendment that said, as of 2017, the top tax rate is 39% on personal income tax. We hereby amend the Constitution to say that for the next 6 months, it shall be 38.5%. No way fuck it would get passed. And it would be such a inconsequential, useless, dumb thing. nobody would do it. It'd be fucking... We couldn't amend the Constitution to say if... the Constitution is hereby amended, where if you made no money last year, you don't have to pay any taxes. We wouldn't amend the Constitution to say that. It'd be amazing. Whatever it would take to have us amend the Constitution would be fucking...
Do you think it's because it's so partisan, or because the Constitution is held in such high regard? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like people... constructionists...
Smart people.
Maybe. I think the world changes, and we should change along with it.
Oh, yeah. You want to go toe-to-toe with the lawyer?
No, man. I'm just saying shit changes in hundreds of years. I mean, but...
Oh, I agree with you.
So, go ahead.
Oh, I think you're right. It's a combination of the two of them. We're in a hyper-partisan era, and the Constitution...
To me, it's just so hands-off. It's like you can't even talk about changing it or... You're a shitty American. It's like maybe things change. Maybe something should change. Maybe the voting age should whatever it might be. Something with gun rights. Like, what kind of guns can you have? It's not stated in there. Maybe you should have a grenade launcher. Maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you should have an automatic. Like, and granted, the courts decide it and interpret it. But maybe some of the stuff should be tweaked a little bit, and that's okay because. People change, technology changes, and the world changes. Maybe some things in the Constitution should change if the time is right and it makes sense. I don't know.
I absolutely agree. I think that there's no reason why the Second Amendment exists as it does right now. And I say this as somebody with a very strict interpretation of the Second Amendment. I'm a big gun guy. It's clear to me that the people of the United States don't like the Second Amendment as it is. Now, to what degree they want to change it, that's up for debate. But clearly there's something they could do to tweak it. But we'll never change it. And it's twofold, I think. It's part of it is because the longer the document's in place, the more sacred it becomes. And especially if you're a country like America, where historically we're like the youngest real country that exists. And so we don't have that deep history. Like if you're English... You're English, and it doesn't matter what form of government you have. You could be communist, you could be libertarian, you could be anarchist. You're still English. Like the Russians, they were communists, and now they're whatever they are. They're still Russians. They don't change who they are. Whereas being an American, American means somebody that believes what the Constitution says. Like that's how we define ourselves. And so to change it is to ask people to change themselves. And we live in an era where, again, this is how people have identified themselves. We've moved. We don't have very many immigrants anymore. You know, there's, you know, throughout the 17, 1800s, most half the 1900s even, you know, people weren't trusting Italians all the way through the 1970s and shit like that. Like, people still had this identity to themselves, and now our identity is tied up in the Constitution. So we're not going to change that. And it's also, I think, a function of a far more activist court than we should have had. Starting in probably around the 60s and 70s, because while they have the good intentions, I believe that a lot of the rulings have really just told people, we'll take care of it. Because when you look at all the major events that have happened in America, and the reason so many of them are controversial is because they weren't voted on. Brown versus Board of Education, that's a court case. Griswold versus Connecticut, it's a court case. Roe versus Wade, a court case. Lawrence versus Texas, it's a court case. Think about that. Integration, abortion, right to contraception, gay marriage, these are really like emotional issues, and the people didn't decide it. It was decided by unelected people. And I think that we failed in a very, very macro sense by essentially all agreeing to allow the judges to make these choices for us because we say things like, well, you know what? I don't really care about gay marriage. And nobody really gave a shit after 2003 at Lawrence v. Texas. Like, there weren't riots. Nobody really, really cared. A couple people did for fundraising purposes, but that's it.
What would you recommend, though? Like, a nationwide vote on that sort of thing? Or, like...
I think what happens is, because we've abdicated so much of the decision-making to other people who we don't have to think about, the average citizen doesn't have to be engaged in politics. Mm-hmm. There's not nearly as much... of a reaction when you vote. You know, you could vote for Trump, you could vote for Hillary. It's not going to really be that much different. We know it's not going to be that much different. It's a little bit different here, a little bit different there. And it's because so much of what we do is tied up in bureaucracy or unelected judges or whomever. And we're lucky. Things are going along pretty good so far. We're not a crazy dictatorship. But people don't really see the importance of voting because their fate isn't tied to the government as much. And they don't feel as engaged. And I think that we've created a national civic ennui, essentially. And I don't think that's healthy in the long run. But for right now, it's working because even when judges make these decisions, I don't like them all the time, but they're usually pretty close to the mainstream. Like, people like Roe versus Wade, like, America's not like a totally pro-life country, but we're not a totally pro-choice country either. And the decision's kind of ambiguous. Like, most people, I think, are like, I think sometimes abortion should happen, but sometimes it shouldn't. And Roe versus Wade kind of lets that happen. Same with Lawrence v. Texas. Like, we haven't had too many decisions where the court was like, we actually have decided that only transsexuals can marry and can only marry dogs. That's the rule of the land. Like, no, people haven't had to face this issue where they're like, wait, what the fuck? Oh, shit. Like, it's usually a very contentious issue, so it hasn't been a big deal. But maybe one day it will be a big deal, and I'll probably be dead or I won't care, because I don't give a shit about what.
Well, I mean, the last amendment to the Constitution was in 1992. It was about congressional salaries.
And when was that amendment proposed?
I actually pulled it up. It's 1789. But
yes, it is. It was one of the amendments proposed along with the Bill of Rights. And I believe that amendment was actually scheduled in the top two or three. It was actually going to be before the right to bear arms. Because people think, like, oh, this is the First Amendment. It's the most important. The Second Amendment is the most important. No, there was actually a couple of other amendments. I know there was something before the First Amendment. So they were just kind of like one and two by happenstance, and that was actually the oldest bill to ever sit in waiting to be passed.
Yeah, 202 years. But, like, do you find it odd that there hasn't even – nobody – they haven't even tried to add an amendment or ratify anything since then? Or am I wrong?
No. Well, before then – the closest one was the Equal Rights Amendment in the 70s. And they had, again, you need essentially in a broad scope of 70% of the people, 60 one way, 75 the other type of deal. And I think they were in about the 55-60 range. So it was like kind of there, but not really. But even you look at the one in 92 there when they amended it. Well, look at what it did. Just changed some rules. It, almost parliamentary in nature. They changed some rules on when senators and everybody gets paid. Like nobody gave a shit. It was like a very minor procedural deal. I don't really know what the next big amendment would be. If I had a guess, I would guess the next big amendment would be something on guns, because something like an equal rights amendment for equal pay for women and all that, it's going to be a non-issue. Society's moving towards full equality right. That way. Same with gay marriage. Like, in 30 years, nobody's going to give a fuck about gay people. It's just going to be a non-issue. Guns, I think guns are going to be a big issue for a long time. Mm-hmm. Because there's really nobody's happy with the way it is. People want more guns. They want fewer guns. Whatever.
Right.
Like, nobody really likes it, which is actually probably the evidence that it's actually the good law that we like it. But I think that if something happens, it will be an amendment to further restrict gun ownership. I think there's going to be, you know, the courts have made their decision. They're very clear. Gun ownership is very lax, very universal. There's going to be some crazy that happens as far as some sort of, like, the Columbine times a thousand type of deal, and people are just going to react and they're going to oppose. I just think that the way the country is shifting that way. It doesn't mean I support it, but I think that's what's
happening. Yeah, I mean, I question it. I mean, after Sandy Hook, which I think was real, I'm not sure.
I will fucking end you and ban you from the site for that shit. You're not Ronda Rousey.
It was a joke. I believe in Sandy Hook. I was more imitating Alex Jones.
I know, you're mocking Alex Jones. Yeah, although Ronda Rousey wasn't a believer.
She just thought the video was interesting.
I thought that video's interesting. Yeah, why would it be interesting? I think you're watching children get murdered is interesting.
After Sandy Hook, though, if it wasn't going to happen, there was a groundswell. People were pissed, but literally, from what I can tell, nothing happened after that. I mean, if that didn't do it, what is, like, killing, like, 20-something little kids? Like, fuck off. Like, if that doesn't what would you have to do to get 38 states to, like, make some massive sweeping changes on gun laws?
Basically, what will happen is Sandy Hook is, quote-unquote, enough. So is Columbine. It's like, although the more it happens, the more decentralized.
Absolutely.
But I think really why Sandy Hook didn't really get any traction for anything is you look at the times we live in. Columbine was a big, scary deal because in the 90s. And the 90s were this idyllic, perfect decade. We beat the evil Russians. Everybody was making money. We had this internet thing booming. We had the future at our fingertips. So we didn't have any real problems, essentially. Today, everybody focuses on terrorism. It's on the news all the time. 9/11 has continued to define the world today. Mm-hmm. And you see little, you know, terrorist shit all around the world. And that isn't, you know, a real existential threat. You worry about, because that's an ideological threat. Whereas, you know, school shootings are bad, but they're not. There's no ideology behind them. There's no, like, you know, organization of young men that want to shoot people in school. It doesn't exist. So right now, it didn't have any impact. But in 50, 60 years, whatever, when I presume that the current state of the world, the terrorism and everything, will cool down just due to natural cycles, something will be happy and peaceful, there will be a big shooting, and then somebody's going to go, all right, you know what? We live in the future with the Jetsons. We have flying cars and talking robots. No more guns.
Or everybody will just have armor and nobody can get shot anymore unless you shoot them in the head. So anyway, we went on this rant based on ticks in Chicago, which is interesting. And I was going back to my little outline here. I'm like, wow, we really got off track there. So anyway, there's this thing called Powassan tick virus, and essentially anyone bitten by an infected tick is susceptible to this rare virus. The virus can be fatal in up to 15% of cases with symptoms, doctors warn. And basically, it's like a Lyme disease sort of thing. If you get bit by this tick, everyone is at risk for it. No matter the age.
This is the one where if you get bit by the tick, you get the Big Dipper in your head.
I'm seeing flu-like symptoms.
That's a really good joke, people. Fuck you. You have to understand Lyme disease, but it works.
I'm not a Lyme disease expert.
Lyme disease presents with a star-shaped scar. I watch a lot of
Mics. Okay. That's a good place to get medical.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was a variation of smallpox presented. Lyme disease does present with a rash. I think a circle on the head, usually underneath the scalp.
Or wherever it happens to bite you. But anyway, they're saying this is going to be a really bad tick season because it was a warmer winter and whatever, the cold kills them and there's less. So this could be like our new SARS or monkeypox or Ebola or whatever the scary disease is this year. You could be hearing a lot about this, is my prediction. I'm hoping this is the new scary disease of 2017, because most years we get at least one.
Hey, you know, it's how the world works. Nobody's going to die from it. Nobody's going to give a fuck. It'll just be like you said, it'll be like SARS or Ebola. Nobody died. I'm sure maybe one or two people died or something like that, but it wasn't some huge outbreak. I was just talking to my mom the other day about this, and everybody forgets it right before 9/11 happened. That whole summer, that was a summer of shark attacks.
Yeah.
And everybody thought that everybody's getting eaten by sharks, but the data said that there was no more or less shark attacks than normal. Right. It was exactly average. But people just decide. It's like when blonde-haired, blue-eyed girls were getting kidnapped in the Caribbean or shit like that. Like, it became kind of a thing. So now this year, there's going to be a bunch of stories of, little Jenny, all she ever wanted to do was go camping with her father. And one day, after years of her begging, at the tender age of 8, he took little Jenny camping with him. It was just like his father took him camping. They caught some fish. They even saw a deer or two. They didn't shoot it, of course. They just took pictures. And then, as they lay down to sleep, a deer wandered by and sniffed little Jenny. And she thought, oh, what a cute deer. She petted the deer on the snout. The deer turned return. Everything was good, but what little Jenny didn't know, that deer had given her the death tick, and now little Jenny is dead. And that is what you have to worry about. All this and more at 9 o'clock on your local news.
Yeah, pretty much. You don't watch the local news a lot. A lot of fires. People getting shot. So, net.
What local news do you get?
I don't even know what that question means.
I asked that. Okay.
And I don't mean that being a jerk, like you're an idiot for asking it. No. But like Boston. It's Boston stage.
Okay. Because my local news is, I'm 15 miles outside Chicago, so I get Chicago's mm-hmm. local news. However, when I was in law school in DeKalb, I'd be out there a lot. DeKalb was within about 20 miles of Rockford, so they would actually have, Rockford anchors. And I know that different people, once you get a certain range outside of, the major city, they'll have a lot of the major city news, but they'll also interject, and here's, one segment from Rockford or something like that. So I didn't know, because I know you're Cape Cod. It's not exactly, you're not Southie or anything like that. You're not, a Boston suburb, per se. You're a little more removed. So I wondered if, maybe there's, a Cape Cod weather girl. It's thanks there, guys. Everything's going to be good there up in Boston. But out here on the Cape, we're going to have a nor'easter coming through. So you better batten down the hatches and shape up or shape out.
Yeah, for Massachusetts, it's all Boston stuff. I know, in New Hampshire, there might be, a couple, Portsmouth, affiliates. Because when I've gone up there, they've got some Boston channels and some, more local ones as well. But it's all Boston here. And speaking of Boston, good segue, Boston's got a reputation for being a racist city. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but that's kind of the rep Boston has.
Wait, hold on. Wait, Cape Cod is Massachusetts.
Correct.
And I'm going to be in New Haven. That's in Connecticut.
Correct.
I know this is going to be Mike doesn't know geography. I know that they're all in the same place, but are New Haven and Cape Cod that close?
It's 3 hours.
Oh, fuck, you can't drive 3 hours. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I'm going to have to put out big time.
I don't know what that... I don't even want to know what that means. But
I'm going to have sex with you.
Oh, okay.
So, anyways, back to your racist Boston fans giving Adam Jones
shit. Adam Jones, he's an Orioles player. He created some waves when he called out Red Sox fans for yelling racial slurs at him during a recent Red Sox game. Fans yell stuff at players all the time. Some obviously will cross the line and say they shouldn't. I don't think that should be an indictment on an entire town. But this isn't like a new thing for Boston, whether it's the Celtics from the 80s with Bird and McHale and that whole era. And you were talking about the Patriots being a predominantly white team, which I don't agree with.
They signed a fucking dude from Stanford with a name like Bryce or something.
Right.
It was incredible.
That's one player on a 53-man squad. More quarterbacks than not are white, right?
It's because of Brady, Gronkowski, and Welker. You had these three dudes who are all white, and you found especially Welker and Gronkowski. You got skill position guys that are white. That shit don't happen. You guys get white wide receivers. Nobody has a white wide receiver. That's crazy. That's bonkers. But fucking New England. They managed to pull.
Well, being. I can't speak on this because I'm biased. I'm from the area. Is that? Do you think there's any accuracy in that? I mean, I don't think you've ever been to Boston, but is that plausible?
No,
an entire city is more racist than another one?
No, I really don't think that they're any more racist than anywhere else. Frankly, I don't really think that. I would be willing to bet that the vast majority of the fans that do something racist, and it happens. Aren't actually really racist.
Oh, they're shit-faced.
Well, they're shit-faced and they're trolls, and I think...
that, too.
And I know it's not... Look, it's not an excuse being a dickhead. It really doesn't. But a lot of people will say things because they know it will upset you. They're not, saying nigger, because they're really racist. They know... They're saying because they know it will bother you.
It's John Jones and Daniel Cormier.
Basically, they're saying it to Adam Jones because they want to do anything they can to get under the guy's skin, and so that's what they know will do it. And yes, that's a little crazier. Some fans may not do that, but they're all on the West Coast, and they're hippies. So I think Boston's like any other big city, and maybe the fans are nastier. I don't think they are. I think really it is that they're closer. Boston has a very old ballpark, like the really old ballparks. The fans are right on top of you. Most ballparks, they're not. Most ballparks, you're not really close to the fans. There's, you know, usually a little bit of space between you. So the fans, well, they can get in your head a little bit. And, you know, I remember it's spring training once, and I was watching Barry Bonds, and he's out there in the outfield, and I was out there by him. And people were chanting steroids at him and stuff like that.
Were you crying while they were doing that?
No, I was beating them. I was taking names, getting ready to beat them up later. And but Barry, you know, after one inning, he kind of gave him a little bit of shit back. There's a lot more give and take between fans and baseball than there's, like, you know, football. Like, Brady has never spoken to a single fucking fan in his life during the game. Like, maybe he jumped up in the fans, I'm the best ever, I'm going to bang a supermodel, and then he jumped down. Like, it just doesn't happen. But I don't think Boston fans are, you know, it's a thing. It's what they're associated with, so people play it up because sports are all fantasy anyways. It's like in Philadelphia. Philly fans aren't really horrible people, but we all pretend, oh, you threw fucking batteries at Santa Claus, man. Yeah. You're really evil. Meh. I'm sure some dick fuck did it in Denver once also, but everybody's like, we let it go. I mean, I know that in L.A., a Dodgers fan stabbed a Giants fan. The fucking dude was like, the dude was in intensive care. They raised like $5 million to save his life. But nobody thinks L.A. is super violent or racist or anything like that. People want to see real racism. You go to Europe and you see fucking soccer matches. That's real racism. Right. That's racism where players are having bananas thrown at them. That's racism, like, it's racism like that where you laugh at it. You go, are you serious? It's because it's so comical. Right. I mean, it's so bad that regularly, not like once ever, but probably multiple times a year, teams will have to play in front of nobody because their fans have been banned from the stadium for a game because they were all too racist. I mean, there's a fucking guy in Italy was just racially abused up here. It was so bad, he walked off the field and refused to play anymore. And here's what's really crazy. Everybody knows that he was, you know, somebody's probably said Maracona or whatever the fuck the Italian thing is, Adam. The Italian Federation said that he should be suspended for walking off and being a poor supporter or something like that. Like, it's that bad. It's, like, it's really bad in Europe. Way beyond anything we can think of. Americans, we're very hard on ourselves, and that's a good thing because it makes us better people. But fucking you, man. We're not talking Slovakia. This happens in Italy. It happens in France, England, Spain. Like, these are main countries. Germany has it, and it's really scary when it happens in Germany. So, you know, Boston fans, the most racist Boston fans, like your everyday average casual fan in England.
Yeah, I mean, to me, strictly in the United States, there's assholes in every city and every town and people who run their mouths and say stupid shit. I mean, it can happen anywhere, anytime, any city. So, I mean, I don't put a lot of stock in it, but there is that history of Boston just always being unusually white and unusually racist. Which I always find odd based on the makeup of Massachusetts and the state being, you know, what most people, Massachusetts, the most liberal state in the country, the first to have, you know, gay marriage and health care and all this stuff. And then at the same time being known as the most racist sports town in the country. There's a weird, it doesn't match up, but
I think a lot of it's just the Irish thing, because not just that Boston has white people, it has a very, very specific group of white people, and they're very proud of themselves. They have a fucking basketball team named after them.
Yeah.
And that's like the blackest sport there is, and somehow they have an Irish name, right, of all things. But, I mean, it's not really, you know, it's no more racist than anywhere else. It's just, you know, it's just fans. It's fine. Let's face it. If Red Sox fans were actually racist, David Ortiz wouldn't be a god. Right. Pedro Martinez wouldn't be a god. I mean, these aren't just black people. They're black foreigners. And when Big Poppy said, this is my fucking city, or whatever he said, like, they all went nuts for that.
Yeah, Big Pop.
Like, they want to win. And trust me, when that team won in 2004, Yeah, you had Mueller, you had Johnny Damon, you had a couple of white guys, but that's a pretty fucking ethnic team if you look at it. It was Manny, Big Poppy, Pedro. Those are pretty fucking foreign black dudes, man, and some of the were cheaters, and they're all gods.
Right. Speaking of gods in Boston, Isaiah Thomas, not the one from the Pistons, put up 53 points in the Celtics win over the Wizards last night, Tuesday night. 29 of the points came in the fourth quarter and overtime. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the story of Thomas, and the only reason I bring this up is his sister died, and like she died. Basically after this game where they beat the Wizards in game two of the playoffs, Thomas said his performance was brought on because his sister was watching over him and it was her birthday.
Well, that didn't.
But that's what he's saying.
Her watching presence did not make him a good basketball player. Let's be clear.
I concur, and you can probably imagine what I think of that. But if you don't know the story, Thomas's sister,
Voodoo isn't real.
Died at 22 years of age in a single vehicle car accident on April 15th, the day before the first round of the playoffs. So obviously Thomas's head has been in the game, and in the first game of the series, he had a tooth knocked out from an elbow and basically had to have like two different dental surgeries on Monday and Tuesday, and he spent about like 6 or 7 hours at the dentist, then puts this game up. So I'm starting to wonder if there's like, I don't think the Celtics are anywhere near the teams of the West, you know, like Golden State and the Spurs and those guys over there. But there's a little bit of, like, I don't want to say destiny or a feel-good story here, but Isaiah Thomas is playing really well. He's got the story with his sister. He's getting teeth knocked out. I mean, do you think they have a shot to get out of the East, or have you been following this at all?
I think they for sure have a shot to get out of the East. And that's, I mean, look, that's really just a function of there's only two teams in the East worth a damn, and they're one of them. I mean, Isaiah Thomas, what he's doing, what he did the other night with the 56, and especially the 29 fourth, I think it was, and that's a very common theme. Thomas lights up in the fourth. He's been the most clutch performer in basketball in the fourth quarter all season. He's a chucker. He shoots a lot. He's not great at defense, but he does seem to have that, and it's blasphemous to really say it, but almost Michael Jordan, like, he rises to occasions type of deal. Like, he really, like, he doesn't crumble at all. He's carrying that team. He is emerging as that one thing that the Celtics need, which is every team that's great in the NBA has a megastar. He's their megastar. I think he burns out quick because he's 5'9". And so I have with Allen Iverson, same thing. Some guys are super small, but when they get in their groove, they're unbeatable. But unfortunately, they're kind of, you know, they're fat. They're Anthony Pettis types guys. And I don't think Thomas does it in his mid-30s like LeBron will, but he's doing it right now. Whether he gets past LeBron, I mean, I don't know. It could be the Nogueira to Fyodor situation because LeBron is, I mean, let's face it. In any single game, the only basketball player I would take before LeBron is Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. I think in a really, when LeBron wants to, he can take over a game. He can take over a game almost in ways that Jordan couldn't do. I don't think he does it for the whole game like Jordan, but in spurts, LeBron is simply unbeatable. He's bigger than everybody, stronger, faster, smarter. He knows more. He can pass. Like, everything about LeBron is perfect. He's been in the finals like 37 years in a row now, and it's not an accident.
Yeah.
He carries the Cavaliers. Yeah, they have Irving and Love. They have good perimeter players and good complementary pieces. But it's still LeBron James. I mean, he's the one that dragged that fucking team to a title last year against the Warriors. Like, that was an act of superhuman godlike ability. So basically, if you're the Celtics, you have to go to the god of NBA, and that's it. And if you do, your reward will probably be maybe one of the greatest teams of all time in the Warriors. And if it's not the Warriors, probably the Celtics. Spurs. I don't think Spurs. Rockets, who were playing out of their fucking mind. I mean, they were just lighting up the Spurs. I mean, yesterday that game was over, like, in the first quarter. They dominated them so bad. So, yeah, the West has so much depth. I mean, the 4 or 5 team in the West, I mean, you take the Rockets, the Spurs, the Clippers, the Jazz even, they'd all be 1 or 2 in the East. But it doesn't matter because you get the championship best of 7, anything can fucking happen in that. You can see LeBron James carry a team, and he might do it again this year. He might get to that championship seven games, and it doesn't matter how drained he's been, how much he's been beaten down, how off this year's been. You give me 4 out of 7 games for LeBron James, that's how we should turn it on. And Isaiah Thomas, he's on fire. He's in that zone. He's been in that zone all year. You look at the Warriors, Durant's been hit and miss. He kind of started off slow. He had the injury. Steph Curry, he's not been as good as before. He's still an amazing player. He's just not the guy that drops threes from half court for fun. I mean, Thomas, though, is that guy. He's in the zone. He's as on fire as I've seen anybody. Like, even Westbrook, who was a fucking video game character to life this past year, averaged a triple-double. He slowed down and got kind of tired in the playoffs. Thomas isn't. That dude's ready to go. Nothing's stopping him. So I think he's going to do it. I think he's going to take the Celtics to the finals, and I think they'll probably play the Warriors. I think that he'll put up a valiant effort. You're going to see a bunch of games where he scores 50. Warriors probably win it, but it's going to be a star-making performance for Thomas.
Yeah, two things with the Celtics right now. One is obviously the storyline. I don't want to say it's a storyline, but the story with the sister and him stepping up the game and playing for her, I think that's going to catch on a little bit as the playoffs continue. And second, the Celtics made that trade with the Nets a couple of years ago through Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, two guys who were essentially out of the league. So the Nets had the worst record in the NBA this year and should, in theory, depending on how the ping pong balls fall, should be in line for the first pick in the draft this year. But you never know how the balls will drop.
Oh, but the Celtics get the Nets pick.
What's that?
The Celtics get the
right.
Nets
they're
going to
get the first pick in the draft this year. That's what I'm saying.
This is fucking hilarious. I think it's Danny Ainge is still running things there. What a genius! Like, they have a really good team with a superstar who's super young, who they can afford to max out at about $250 million for 5 years in a year or two, and they get young draft picks. It's like the 76ers tanked to get this many draft picks. And they've actually had some good guys. So some of these guys are doing well for them. But, I mean, the fucking Celtics, they're going to dominate the East for the next 10 years. There's just no question. The Cavaliers are a 3 or 4 year project at most. LeBron is at his end. The Bulls are terrible. The Heat suck. The Wizards are average. They're John Wall's all they got, and they don't have anything coming up. Atlanta sucks. The fucking Celtics are going to. I mean, they're for sure winning at least one, probably 2 or 3 championships in the next decade, just by averages. They're going to be the new Cavaliers, essentially. Mm-hmm. But it's more power to them. They built right. They did it all. I don't think they win it this year, because when you look at Isaiah Thomas, if you slotted him on the Warriors, he'd still, on any given night, could be the third or fourth best guy on that team. And he's far and away the best guy in his own team. I mean, the Warriors, they've got, just between Thompson, Durant, and Curry, setting on Draymond Green, just put him in the background, they have three dudes that can by themselves carry any squad in the NBA. And over 7 games, the odds are they're all going to get hot at least once, and probably most of them multiple times at the same time. That team is it's so stupid how good they are. I'm in awe of them, and I love the way they play. I love watching Curry drain the threes. Durant is this hybrid forward guard wing type of player where he's 6'10" and has the skills of a guy 6 feet tall. It's a great team, and I'm a Giants fan, so that doesn't actually mean jack shit because I'm a Bulls fan also, but it's, hey, way better than being the fucking Bulls. We have Jimmy Butler, who's really good, and then a bunch of fucking old dudes who suck, and we have a shitty-ass GM and a dead owner.
Anything else going on in the world?
I mean, there's lots going
on. Anything you'd like to discuss at the moment?
No, all my thoughts right now have been dedicated towards
writing. Yeah, how's that going?
Oh, fuck my life. Fuck my
okay, so not well.
It's like the first time I've ever... Obviously, I've been a writer forever. I'm 34. I started writing on the internet at 18. So that's a long fucking time. But this is like the first time where, like, I feel pressure because it's Yale. Like, smart people will read it. So I'm really, really working on things. And suddenly, like, paragraphs that I would have once said, yeah, that's really good. I'm like, no, that needs to be better. That needs to be better. Because I'll have, like, 5,000 words, and I'll be like, 500 of them. I'm like, yeah, that's really good. Yeah, I like the way that. And the rest of it is fucking utter just dredge. It's just bilge. It's just so shitty. And so that's just, I don't know. I just feel like this is it. Like, not, it's not God. It's none of that shit. There's no fucking wizard up there to control my life or anything. But let's face it, I'm 34. I'm a burnout. I'm a fucking waste. And I got to Yale somehow for a couple of weeks. If I don't make a good impression here, I'm not getting another chance. It's not like Oxford's calling me up next month or some shit like that. So I gotta fucking give it my all. And it'll probably suck and fail, but I don't know. What else am I gonna do? This is it. So you give it your all, and then look at this way. If I catch the trapeze artist, I live. If I don't, I fall in a spectacular death.
I mean, what do you see coming out of it? I mean,
I have no idea.
It sounds like you're putting a lot on this, but it's like
I am in this. All I can think is
you're gonna get a big book deal.
I didn't know what I was getting into.
Right.
I just like, oh, all right, I'll apply. And then I start reading this thing, and they're like, this will be Publisher's Day and Agent Day. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? I do dick and fart jokes on the internet in about 1,200-word intervals. Are you out of your fucking mind? I submitted a story about me punching a monkey in Hong Kong. I don't meet with agents. What the hell is going on? So I'm like, oh, shit. I guess important people, it kind of occurred to me, like, oh, important people will read this. So I guess I'm like, I guess this is how things work. Like, you know, George W. Bush shouldn't have been president, but he went to Yale. He made those connections. And this is, I guess, where connections are made. So I'm like, well, I find myself almost, like, I'm trying to balance writing something that I feel is honest and real with also trying to impress smart people. Mm. And I'm actually defaulting towards honest and real because I feel like there's a lot of people out there, and I was going to say like us, but more like me, just that, like, it's not that I'm dumb. I know all the intellectual shit, and I'm exposed to it, and I read it, but I just want to sit on the couch and watch Wheel of Fortune, and I want to, you know, that guy needs to be represented in the world. We have a lot of people doing the, you know, tired, poor immigrant and the beaten down minority. And I can't really argue against them. Their stories need to be told more than mine does. Those are important. They matter. They change the world. But I kind of hope on some level that there's somebody that might read it and go, oh, I'm like that. Oh, yeah. I'm in my 30s. I'm white. Everybody thinks I should do better than I should. I know I should do better than I should. But I just want to watch game shows and watch TV.
Oh, yeah.
I think if it's like Office Space, you know, when they're like, what would you do if you had Office Space? I would do nothing. Right. I would just sit and do nothing. Yeah. And
hey, you know what? I mean, I think everybody's got to figure out what makes them happy and what makes them tick. If you're content doing that, that's great. Like, I don't judge anybody for that. Like, I don't think I could do that. Like, I don't mind going. I like going to work. I like working and trying to, you know, whatever, do a good job. I would have a hard time sitting around or laying on the beach my whole life. I don't think I'd be happy doing that. I kind of like a little bit of a challenge and doing something different every once in a while. And even like my job, it can get mundane when you've been doing it for 12 years. But there's always something different or something weird or some sort of issue you can't foresee, whether it's, a fridge breaking or the power going out in the middle of the night or whatever it might be. There's always something and some kind of challenge, or even stuff with staff or scheduling or whatever. There's always something a little different that I can kind of like attach myself to and kind of make it a challenge or always try and do better or whatever it might be. But I don't think everyone thinks that way, and that's fine, yeah. And that's what kind of makes life interesting. If everybody was the same, it'd be a pretty dull place.
Yeah, and I really, you know, I hope that whether it's me or somebody else one day can, let's face it, this isn't going anywhere. It's me. Like I'm a fucking jackass. I don't succeed like that. If I do, I won't even know it. I'll probably blow all the money on roulette or something. But I hope that, you know, people write stories that, you know, tell your story also. Because I feel there's so much of the world that isn't having their voice spoken, which sounds really, I know, it sounds really gay and all this shit, blah, blah, blah. But we're so used to, like, the, I would say, traditional marginalized voices getting sick. Uh-huh. And it's great, and they should, because historically no one gives a fuck what a white guy in his mid-30s who's Christian in the suburbs of Chicago. Like, ooh, what a horrible thing I've had to deal right. with. And I all I can really think is to portray it in the sense of there's a lot of people out there like me who don't get to have a great struggle, and that great struggle does help define people, and we feel like any problems we have aren't important because they're not as right. important. Like, no matter how much depression I go through, anxiety, whatever, nothing I ever go through will be one-tenth of what somebody in Montgomery, Alabama went through in the right. 60s. But it doesn't mean that what I go through is, you know, should right. be ignored. And there's somebody out there who thinks that way, and it is bullshit. The world shouldn't be spending resources on people like me. But there's also people like me who don't think the world should spend any resources on us, and maybe that person needs to hear that. Like, to hear, yeah, you have everything, and you're not doing anything with it, but you're still a person, and this is what your story right. is. And again, if it works, it does. If it doesn't, I can't do anything else. That's just who I am. I can't write the story about the gay black guy in the inner city gang. Right. Like, that ain't me. And that guy needs to have his story told, and I hope that he does. Like, I know people have an image of me, but, like, when I see, like, you know, Lena Dunham, I said it earlier today to you, I fucking love it. I love those people. I love seeing this ecosystem that is so different than mine, and I want to visit it, and I want to see what it's like to be somebody that when Trump gets elected, you have to go to the hospital because you can't eat. Like, it sounds really crazy, but to believe that passionately about yeah. anything, that's really fucking right. cool. And I don't have that. Like, I would have to have Adolf Hitler knock on my door and say, I'm here to gas, not my mother, what, my dogs, then I would be upset.
Right.
And I like being able to pop into that world or go to Hong Kong. I mean, somebody asked me the other day, what would you do if it had unlimited money? And I thought, I would fucking live in the southwest of France for a couple of weeks in the summer. Because I did that before and it was great. And I would go back there and I'd be in Spain. I would love to be there in the Euros like I was once before and just feed on all that. I fucking love all these cultures we have out there. And I just don't want the brown people in my culture, but I love all of their cultures where they're at. And I can't wait to go visit them. So I'm just praying that I can have some successful book deal and pay off my fucking bullshit dumbass lawyer student loans.
You're still paying off loans, huh? Yeah, it's bad.
I don't even pay them right now because I know that if you pay, say you have $1 million in debt, and you pay $10,000 one month, and then you don't pay it for another 5 months, well, you're just going to get penalized. Right. And it's going to go up. So you're better off just saving your money and then trying to pay it off all at once. Yeah. Plus, I don't have lots of money.
Right.
And I live way below the poverty line, so I don't care. I live the life of a recluse and a rapscallion.
So is what you're writing for the Yale thing, is that like basically autobiographical?
Yeah. I don't know how much we went into this. I drink a lot. I smoke a lot.
Is a Lent over?
Yes, Lent is over. Easter happened. You remember when Easter?
Yeah.
Did your kids not get fucking Easter eggs?
Yeah, no, we did that.
Okay, that's the end of the line.
Okay. Did you go the last 40 days without drinking?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I went, like, another week after it.
Okay. But now you're off the wagon again.
Yeah.
Okay. I just like to keep up.
Not as bad as it was before. But Lent starts with Mardi Gras, ends with Easter.
What's Mardi Gras got to do with it?
Mardi Gras is French for Fat Tuesday. Lent starts on Wednesday. So the tradition was, during Lent is a time of reflection. You abstain, you fast, you do, you know, take care of yourself. So every the Tuesday before Ash Wednesday kicks off Lent, everybody would eat and drink, have one big last get together.
So dumb. All right.
It's a French. It's French.
Thing. Okay. So for 40 days, for 40 days, you're supposed to be good and not do shit, and then immediately after you can, and the day before you're supposed to go nuts.
You're not really supposed to, like, after it's over type of deal. You're supposed to be like, yeah, fuck it. Can't you just be normal all year long?
Like, what the hell?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, there's no actual, like, your soul goes to heaven type of bullshit behind it. It's more just, this is the period that leads up to the most holy time in the history of Christianity, and if you want to, this is an excuse to get your life in order. And, like, for me, that's what I do. Like, to me, it's just... to the extent that I have any deity in my life, is my little, like, I'm going to try to behave for this amount of time. And then I do it. Like, if I don't do it, I don't think the boogeyman's coming down to get me or any bullshit like that. It's all... The fucking more I read and everything, it's all going by the wayside anyways. It doesn't matter. But I like the tradition of it. It makes me feel... It helps me feel a connection to my late father, all my ancestors. They all did this. So, you know, there's a connection to it. But you know, you put a gun to my head, I'm going to be like, oh, you ate some bacon on a Friday? Eh, you're fucking fine, don't worry. Like, the God's not up there going, oh, look at that. Yeah, you did save all of those nuns that were taking care of the orphans there in Africa, and they all had AIDS, but that one nun had the cure for cancer. Oh, you got them all out. Oh, but you had that BLT that one Friday. Oh, I'm so sorry. No heaven for you. All the virgins are in here for Mike instead. Oops, sucks to be you. Shouldn't have had that bacon. Like, it doesn't work that way.
Right, no, I get it. So, what you're writing is mostly just about your life, or what are you doing?
Yeah, that's what we're getting at. Mishka Shubali, who's been on the show, friend of the show, friend of mine, he actually teaches a class at Yale, and he posted some deal. Oh, fuck, half this is like one of my chapters. And I was like, yeah, I'll submit myself for his class, because I really, honestly, I just did it because I thought this would be kind of a nice thing to do. Like, hey, guy I like, I tried to get in, but I'm not smart enough. And then they accepted it. And his stuff focuses on the mini memoir and nonfiction writing. So it's kind of like personal essay type of stuff, which is easier for me to write because I'm a self-centered dick fuck that spends most of his life, like, narrating his own life in his head. Like, he gets out of the shower. Huh, that's a hell of a shower. Yeah, I wonder what she's doing. Like, I do that stuff a lot.
Okay.
And there's no reason for me to have a fucking autobiography. I think it's stupid. I really do. And the entire thing's actually been framed that way. Because it's basically been, I'm going to Yale. I need to tell people at Yale why I'm good enough to go to Yale. Here's what I came up with. And I'm just writing shit, and in the past 4 or 5 weeks, I banged out 35,000 words. And apparently I'm only submitting two pieces, or two excerpts, one 5,000, one 4,000, which immediately I'm like, oh, well, fuck me. I wrote a fucking book for no
about my about yourself, guess, no less.
Yeah, and, you know, some of here, the thing is, like, it works, and... It's really, like, I've been trying to, like, write myself as a character. And, like, I've been, like, how can I make me interesting? And I know I failed. I really don't know what it's going to be. I'm still in awe of the fact that I'm going to step foot on the campus of Yale. And I'm like, ooh. The entire tenor of everything I've written is this real? Like, how is this happening? Like, this doesn't make any sense. but it is happening, I guess, so that's it. And the sad thing is when I write all this stuff and I look at my life and it does add up. Like, it's not like, if you looked at it, you'd be like, oh, well, of course you went to Yale. You lived there? You went to that high school? You had that thing here and there? Yeah, you're one of those people. But never thought of myself that way, because I'm a dickhead who's looking at one of his puggles sleeping on his fucking pillow right now. Fucking fat bastard.
All right. Has anybody read any of the stuff you wrote? Do you have anybody proofread, or are you just going there cold with no other opinions and just what you put down? By the way, I'm not offering to. I'm just curious.
No, I know. Some of it has actually appeared. Some of it's been on Half-Guard before. The stuff I'm actually going to probably use with them, one thing is the intro kind of thing deal. That's not ever been seen anywhere, and actually none of it has, but I did take a piece. I went back and reread the thing I wrote about my fight in 2003, and I'm like, okay, I can work with this. This is a true emotion and all this. I milked that fucking well once again. And it actually works really, really well. Like, when I was writing it, I go back, I'm like, oh, shit. That ties in. Oh, look at that allegory. Oh, ooh, that's good foreshadowing. So there's that. And I took some other things I did and kind of edited them, made them work, and I can see where they fit as an overall point. I'm like, oh, look at that. It's kind of like I took my own life and I'm editing it together and being like, oh, look at that. There's a consistent narrative happening here. Huh, weird. I don't know if it's any good. I'm hoping it's interesting simply because I put in dick jokes here and there, but I'm Eminem in the movie 8 Mile. It's my one shot, my one opportunity. I'm 30 fucking 4 years old, and Yale said, "Yeah, you're good enough."
Yeah.
If I'm not gonna try now, I'm never gonna try. And I'll, if it works, I have nothing to lose. I'm just gonna, worst case scenario, I'm talking to you on Wednesday nights about MMA. And honestly, if that's my life, I'm really fucking happy with it. So all I can do is go up from here.
I think you can go up from here. Anything coming out on the site in the next couple of days? You writing anything for Half Guarded, or is that you're too tied up with your memoirs?
I have nothing substantive for the site. Although I have a couple things bouncing around, and depending on how the Yale goes, I have a lot to publish, but we'll see.
Okay. All right. Well, on that note, thanks for listening to MMA and Stuff on halfguarded.com. We will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
And it's all over! Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all. Bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day. We hope you enjoy your stay. Outside the sun is shining, seems like heaven ain't far away.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike Coughlin for HalfGuarded.com. If anybody's actually listening to this part, I'll be surprised. But I realized, as a practicing attorney, I should probably mention somewhere, like they do in the movies, the motion pictures, that everything you've heard is exclusive copyright and trademark and every other legal designation permitted within the United States or any other good country. HalfGuarded.com owns everything you just heard. Nobody else does. If they stole it from us, I will find you, and I will kill you, because I have a special set of skills. Also, anybody that's listening to this, email mike@halfguarded.com. I've never really used email, but I can get shit from it. If you've actually heard this, I'm not kidding, I will send you $5 via PayPal. I'm really curious to see if anybody in the world will ever fucking hear this. Five fucking dollars for somebody. I'll probably do it for everybody that listens, unless it gets out of control, and then I'll just delete this part. But until that time comes, everything you heard is property of the HalfGuarded.com website. Bye. Oh, and yes, I'm aware that putting in a copyright thing at the end of a podcast where I've probably stolen music from somebody else is weird, but I promise to pay those artists if they ever request it. HalfGuarded.com. Go!